Hey kids, Him and Her on the radio at WGN, Steve King and Johnny Putman.
That's us.
Last time I checked.
Yeah.
And we're taking you on the road with us tonight. We are broadcasting from the palatial studios of WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida at Gulf Coast State College.
And that's no joke when we say palatial studios. We got elbow room. We got places to spread out here.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable. And we're going to be here till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Whether you like it or not.
This is true. A full show. No more Blackhawks interruptions until way on down the road.
And we have a slew of people helping us sound like we know what the heck we're doing.
We're going to learn stuff tonight. We're going to have fun. You're going to meet some great people, too.
Yeah, we really are. But we want to introduce you to some of the people that are keeping us on the radio,
yes,
both in Chicago and in Panama City, Florida. And let's start back at WGN Radio with the man who at the moment is the keeper of the big plug, he without whom there would be no us to be heard, and
yes,
that would be your Bart Jackson. Hey, Bart, how you doing, man?
No, that's Brett.
Brett, why did I say Bart?
Either works.
No, it doesn't. On the radio, you are definitely a Brett, and you are the keeper of the big plug for the next few hours, right, Brett?
For the next 2 hours, and then you will have your normally scheduled engineer, which will be Dan Long.
All right. Sounds good. Are we doing okay on this end?
Yep. We're actually doing quite well.
Good, good. Excellent. Also, back from Buffalo, New York, is our producer, Andrew B. Harris, he's been back with Lisa Dent because he's now the producer of the, one of the producers of the afternoon show. Hello, Andrew.
I'm actually going by Bart Jackson now.
That's okay. A cool name, isn't it? It sounds like a Western name, Bart Jackson. You don't mess with him.
And what's this about you singing?
Oh, yeah. So, flashback to, I think, the first week I was filling in for the Lisa's show.
Yeah.
I think it was a Friday evening. It was the day that, rest in peace, that Bobby Caldwell died. And I was letting Lisa know that What You Won't Do for Love is one of my go-to karaoke songs. So she decides to say, you should sing it on air. And I'm thinking she's joking. And then come the second segment, she mentions it. And then our sports anchor, Kevin Powell, goes, hey, you should sing it. And so I just, so I got bullied. I got
hey, Andrew?
Peer pressure.
You got bullied into it.
Hey, Andrew?
Yes?
You should sing it.
No, I'm good.
He's good. No, he's
maybe
scared
maybe
to
a
death.
Different karaoke song. Maybe a different karaoke song.
Okay, we'll work on that.
So a little later tonight, some karaoke
you never
from
know.
Andrew.
Oh, yes.
Then in the newsroom, Ron Brown. Hey, Ron, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I got a chance to see that rockabilly band that I was telling you about just
you
last
did.
Night.
Yeah.
Oh, they rocked the house. It was a lot of fun. I wish you were there, but I know.
And what's the name of the band, and where did you see them?
Al Simon and the Saturn Kings, and I saw them at a place called Carrie's on Devon and Western.
Oh, okay. That's a neat little place, too.
Yeah, it's a little place. It's intimate, yeah, as they say.
Yes, yes. Well, you also put up, was it your ticket from the Queen concert that you literally paid like $5.50 to see Queen?
January 1977, yeah. It was one of the first rock concerts, yeah.
Did you just come across that ticket stub? Because that popped up on my Facebook feed and went, what? I was around then. I probably could have gone to that concert, but I don't remember them being that cheap.
I saved those ticket stubs. I don't know why, but I just did. I'm glad that I did. So
yeah.
And it was actually only $5?
Yeah, there were $5, $6.50, and $7.50 for the really good seats, though.
The good seats.
That's amazing, because I think I've told you that's what I paid to see the Beatles at Comiskey Park in 65. $5.
Wow. Yeah, but we didn't think the Beatles were going to go anywhere. We knew Queen were. They were hot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, those were the days, long gone.
Yeah. Well, you're with us, and then Gabe is back in the house this week, right?
Yeah, Gabe is over here working away, slaving over a hot editing system, I think.
Okay.
And in the studio with us here,
yes, we have our in-studio executive producers. We have with us Caleb Jordan. And Caleb is assistant professor of digital media here at Gulf Coast State College. And Caleb, thank you.
At this rate, I think I like Andrew's idea. I'm going to go by Bert Jordan.
You're going to be Bert? Okay.
Professor Bert Jordan.
Well, if you like Andrew's idea, that means you have to do some karaoke later tonight, too.
Oh, gosh.
We'll see about it.
And there's no alcohol in the house, right? That doesn't come on campus.
Not yet.
There's Also with us is Tom Hoots. Tom is instrumental, no pun intended, in pulling this all together for us, because previously we were able to broadcast from Tom's studio 812. And then he was sick of us, so we said, I got to find someplace else to put him.
Actually, I just went to the administration and groveled and said, please, you got to get him out of my studio.
Because in reality, it was a big deal for Tom to rebuild a recording studio, make it into a radio studio. Yeah. And that's what he did a couple of times for us. And we're just tickled to be in here because I feel I loved it over there because it's so cozy and it's got such a nice vibe. But
this is actually like a radio station.
And it's also close to our house.
Yes.
Yeah. Steve, this is a radio station.
Oh, yes, okay. Right.
One. It really. You were on here the other day.
Yes, we were. We were here on Thursday with Karen Morris.
In fact, if you go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, you'll see we posted a couple of pictures. This was one of the easiest drives in to do the show we've ever had, which was surprising because the Seabreeze Jazz Fest is going on down at Pier Park, which is about a mile away from our house down here.
Yeah.
But we drove past there. We drove over the over the bridge, and we're now at the college, and it was the easiest drive we've had maybe ever.
Knock on Formica.
Yeah.
Or I could knock on your head, but you got headphones on. So we're going to take a quick break and come back. Again, stick with us tonight. You can get to us anytime at 312-981-7200. And a listener points out that, in fact, we have slipped into third winter in Chicago.
Yes.
And if you went to our Facebook page, you know I put up the different seasons, because last week we were in the spring of deception when it was in the 80s. But now we're into third winter in Chicago. You find all that stuff on our Facebook page, but tonight you can get to us at 312-981-7200 and stay with us here on WGN.
Okay, here's a depressing thought. First of all, that was Alabama. Mm-hmm. Pass it on down.
Yep.
Today was Earth Day 2023.
Yep.
Alabama released Pass It On Down in April of 1990.
Wow.
And we're still wrestling with all of those problems that they sang about back in 1990.
And Earth Day became official in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So now, think of when you're listening to the lyrics of the song, you go, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here holding a bottle of water, listening to the lyrics going, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff. I did a little back reading on Earth Day, and I was around then. It was a very big deal when I was in high school. We all got together, and you know, we celebrated Earth Day, and we became educated. And as I recall, one of the real positive things that happened was we tried not to litter anymore.
Yeah.
That was, believe it or not, kids, people used to litter like it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. Just throw your crap on the ground, you know? So we have made some strides, but gosh, we got a lot of ground to cover. But 1970, President Nixon said, this is not just for the government to fix, but as a people, we have to get together, and it's not a partisan thing. We all have to make some changes so that we have a world.
And sadly, and I'm tempering my words.
Okay.
Because sadly, right now, I think in some areas, there is more controversy over is this a real thing than there was back in 1990 when Alabama released that song.
Yes.
And yeah, this is a real thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You'd have to be, well.
Yeah.
I hope you guys found a reason to celebrate Earth Day today. And it was pretty miserable weather to get out and do things. In past years, much like Arbor Day, you know, you go out and do something so that you can get your hands dirty and feel the earth and feel like you're doing something positive. And hopefully you had time to do that today.
By the way, we want to return to the Bart Brett, what, and I want to, my mind was kind of going in a Western.
You're scary.
Area, and yes. I wasn't sure why, but we had a texter who said...
630 texter said, I think Steve was thinking about the Maverick Brothers when he called out Brett, and he called him Bart, because they were the Brett and the Bart Brothers were the Mavericks.
Now, James Garner was Brett, and who was
I don't
Bart?
Know.
It was James Garner and...
Simpson. Not that one.
And who?
Jack Kelly.
Yes, Jack Kelly.
Really?
But there were like four of them, weren't there? James Garner, Jack Kelly, Oh, and who are the
four different brothers? There's Brett and Bart and Bill and Bo.
There's Robert Colbert as Brent Maverick, and then
yes,
I'm assuming this one's Roger Moore as Bo.
Yes, Roger Moore.
Yes.
James Bond. Listen to us. Just made our day, Andrew.
Tom Hoots is just shaking his head.
Oh, my goodness.
This is the important stuff, Tom.
I realize it's important. Okay.
Can I just do a quick shout-out, too, because I like to do this. Speaking of names, we have some top fans on Facebook, and I want to give a shout-out to Judy B. and Linda Jarowski and Barbara Whitehead and Ron Altman. They're top fans. They have that rating next to their name, and I love that. But my absolute favorite text on our Facebook page came from Cindy Gia. Says, quote, "I don't care if you broadcast from the moon. Just broadcast." Okay, Cindy.
Okay,
we're
Cindy.
On it.
All right.
Can we call Elon and see if we can do that?
No,
I'm ready.
No.
Okay, well, all right.
And Peggy Johnson Scott is listening, and Sandy McComas and Mary Gold and Bobby Danos. And, oh, gosh, again, you all can get a hold of us through Facebook. But tonight on the show, you can contact us at 312-981-7200.
That's for phone calls and texts. And we should mention a little bit of what we have coming up a little later tonight. We're going to be checking in with a very, very talented author that sadly we haven't talked with in too long a time. She's an internationally known author, Jamie Frevoletti, and she has a terrific new anthology that she is a part of, and we'll talk about that a little later. Then you remember our friend Jessica Radloff, the best-selling author of The Big Bang Theory, the definitive inside story.
There's rumor of a new Big Bang show, which we're all trying to wrap our minds around. What does that mean? The kids
Where are they going to go?
Yeah, the kids of the cast members? Who knows? But maybe she will have some insight because she is an entertainment reporter as well for Glamour magazine.
And I hope she would edit herself and not mention what she mentioned on, was it Twitter, when she talked about her experience meeting Cher, and what she felt she was about to do she met Cher.
She met Cher because she was at the Carol Burnett birthday taping, and that's coming up next week. So we got a lot to talk about with Jessica Radloff coming up.
And also, we're going to try and solve some computer problems a little later tonight. Mm-hmm. Our computer guru, Patrick Crispin, is going to join us. And one of the things we're going to talk about is how the heck you determine what is, Tom, you mentioned Musk. How do you determine what is real and what's not real on Twitter these days? For example, it was just within the past 48 hours, some people on Twitter pretended to be the mayor of Chicago and some of the other high-profile people, and they were putting out things as the mayor of Chicago and some of the other people
saying that roads were closed.
Lakeshore Drive is going to be closing down.
Yeah, the certification check mark thing is just gotten just over the hill on this whole thing, because if you didn't pay, no matter who you were, if you didn't pay, they just took your check mark away. Well, now all of a sudden you've got all these unverified people saying they're
they've got a check mark.
They've got a check. Yeah. Well, they don't say they have a check mark. They just are out there broadcasting as if they were you. They'll change a character or something in the Twitter name and go on and it's going to be confusing for a while, but...
Well, Patrick's going to explain to us what this means, because I was kind of stalked by somebody with a check mark last week, quite seriously, and it was really troubling to me, because I felt like he felt, because he had the blue check mark, that anybody that he was going after would think he was legit.
I'm not sure how legit the check mark makes. I think it just means that Elon got $9.50 from you, but...
But the history of the importance has changed without the audience really
being aware of it.
Of the difference.
It made me very nervous.
Well, we will get into that and a whole lot more coming up. Stay with us at WGN. Girl, put your records on, because this is Record Store Day.
Yes, it is. It's a national holiday.
It should be.
If you didn't know, it's a holiday for independent record shops across the country. In fact, around the world, thousands of record stores get involved in this. And we thought it would be fun to find out what's happening at one of our favorite record stores. And the guy behind the record bin is Tom Lounges of Tom Lounges Record Bin, where the cool kids go. Hi, Tom.
Hi, I love that introduction. And we're still waiting for our favorite cool kids, you and Steve, to come down here and visit us.
We got to do that. We really do.
Yes, we do. Now, you have two locations, Tom, right? Hobart and Michigan City, Indiana?
Yes, we do. Michigan City has a full stage in there. We do some live concerts from time to time. But Hobart is our main base and our original store.
And when did you open the Hobart store? Was that like 5 years ago?
Yeah, it's just over five. In fact, this summer we're going to have our fifth anniversary. Not quite sure what we're doing yet, but I'd like to do like a parking lot party or something fun like that. We're known for having parties and good times. Like today for Record Store Day, we put out free coffee and snacks, and we had live music in front, busking, and of course, store-wide sales. We celebrate Record Store Day twice a year, which is Black Friday, and then they always do it in April. Mm-hmm. And we aren't part of the actual Record Store Day company, I guess you'd say, or project program, but we do celebrate vinyl.
Well, you mentioned that you started 5 years ago, so you really got in at the right time, because anybody who's paying attention knows that now record vinyl sales have surpassed CD. What kind of changes have you seen just in the past year?
Well, you're right. CDs have dropped off considerably. Vinyl is booming, and it's we sell both pre-owned or pre-loved, as we like to call it, and also brand-new vinyl of all different styles and weights. There's 140-gram, 180-gram. It's interesting, the different conglomerations. For instance, Taylor Swift's new one, it comes in four different colors. And the hardcore fans, well, as you know, they're paying a fortune to see her live, and they don't even blink at buying four copies of the same album just because they're a different color.
Are you carrying that album?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we are.
Really?
Well, also, one of our dear friends, Amanda Shires, was the ambassador for this year's Record Store Day, and they came out with some new vinyl. Also, our friends from the Empty Pockets.
They have their purple vinyl coming out, and the Cashbox Kings have theirs out in yellow vinyl. And you mentioned
love those guys. I do a blues radio show myself. It's all recorded and things. Cashbox Kings, they are the kings. I love their new album, Oscars Hotel. Those guys really are a throwback to the old Chicago blues sound, but not so old that the young kids can't relate to them.
That's right.
And it was so cool. I don't know if you saw the latest statistics, but their record is number one on the blues charts over in Europe now.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's huge, because it's only been out for
over here about a week ago at Memorial Opera House in downtown Valparaiso. And I was supposed to be at that show, but something came up. I couldn't make it, and I'm still kicking myself.
They have a show at Fitzgerald's on Sunday, tomorrow.
Yes.
So, we had them on. We did a record release for them a couple of weeks ago, and we're just tickled that things are going so well for them.
What kind of audience are you getting now for people who want to buy vinyl? Is it some of the oldsters, or are you getting a lot of the younger kids, because more groups today are saying, put it out on vinyl?
It's a mix. It really is a broad spectrum of age groups. For instance, it not only is the demographic of our customer base, but our store itself. I mean, I'm going to be 64 this year, and my manager, Riley, who's sitting here with me, she just turned 19 this week. And she's an old soul and knows about things she should have no business knowing about. One of the reasons I hired her, she came in and we were talking, and she brought up Captain Beefheart and Frank Zappa and all these groups. I'm like, how do you even know about this?
But
the kids today are really tuning in to some of these classics and vintage artists.
Yeah, wow. So that Corrine Bailey Ray song was really for Riley at 19 years old.
Right.
That's very cool.
You know, you were talking about CD versus LPs.
Yeah.
I'm going to put her on real quick if that's okay. She's day-to-day there and can tell you about some of the sale demographics. And you'd be surprised to even know the cassettes are coming back. But this is Riley. She is our store manager in Hobart, and Steve and Johnny.
Hi, Riley.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Riley. You're on WGN. We want to make it legal here.
So what got you into vinyl, Riley?
I think when I was, maybe seventh grade, I had gotten my first record player, and I got, like, Green Day and different alternative artists, newer ones, and I kind of started streaming more stuff and didn't pay attention to records more or as much. And then I went to this random shop in the middle of nowhere, and they said, whatever you can put in a tote bag, you can take home for free. And I got, like, Wayne Newton.
Wayne Newton?
Oh, I love Wayne Newton. Like, Barbara Streisand, all these, like, older artists. And then I ended up falling down this rabbit hole, and I absolutely adore records, and I adore the sound.
Well, when people come in to buy from you at the record bin, is it just because records are cool and they see this as a phase, or are they saying that the sound is better, or they like holding the record to read the liner notes? What kind of feedback are you getting?
We have a lot of people that absolutely adore the liner notes. I will have people, we have a listening station in the middle of the store, and so I will have kids sit there my age and just read the liner notes and actually appreciate the record for what it is more than just streaming it on a platform. And a lot of people like that physical copy of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned the listening station. You just took me back to something that was one of my favorite moments. You used to be able to go into record stores, and in the record stores, they would have little booths, like the size of a telephone booth, if anybody remembers what a telephone booth was. And you would go in there, and you would be able to take your 45 or album or whatever and put the needle down and just listen through headphones.
Yeah.
And that was
something you couldn't do at home either, because you didn't have headphones at home.
Yeah.
So that was a different experience.
That's very similar to what we have. Any of the pre-owned albums that we have, you can put on the turntable that we also sell in the store and listen to it there and just kind of see what you think of the album. And it's a great way for people to experience different music that they're not sure if they're going to buy or not. You know, even I have ones, they'll get silly little dollar albums and put them on there and just enjoy the minute for it. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. And I'm glad you mentioned that you sell record players there, because a lot of people say, well, you know, I can go to a garage sale and pick up records, but what am I going to play them on? Or maybe they've got an old record player and they don't know where to get the needle, the stylus for it. So they could contact you guys and find out what kind of record players you have. Do you have them all prices, like some that are just you want to listen to the music, or something that's a little bit more high end? What would you say is available in the store?
We usually have 3 to 4 different kinds of record players, all of the same brand, Audio Technica. We carry ATLP3s, ATLP60s, and I believe 120s as well. Sometimes we carry the Bluetooth. I believe we have a few Bluetooth ones in stock.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep, but we also use both ends in our store, so we carry the 60s that we have. Those are the listening table turntables that we have that people can demo, and then we also use the LP3s in the store as well to play music and the overhead speakers.
Riley, you're obviously doing the right thing.
You are. And you give me hope for the future. We're going to take a break. Riley, it's a pleasure to meet you. If you'll put us back in touch with Tom, we'll take a break and we'll come right back and talk a little bit more with Tom Lounges of Tom Lounges Record Bin here on WGN.
Talking about Record Store Day, and I am holding in my hands, even as we speak, an original copy of Disraeli Gears by Cream. Tom Hoots just grabbed this from his files.
What a great cover on that album.
Oh, yeah. And some of the stuff that was on here, Sunshine of Your Love, Strange Brew, Man, what a great, great album. We're talking with Tom Lounges. He is the owner and founder of Tom Lounges Record Bin and music columnist and feature writer at the Times in Northwest Indiana.
And Tom Riley is a find. Oh, my gosh, that girl is. She gives me hope for the future.
Yeah, she is. I'll tell you, that's how I felt when I first met her. She was 17. Came to a couple of our open mics at the store when we were doing them pre-COVID. And we talked, and she tells me, although I don't remember this, that she applied for the job and tried to do an interview with me, and I didn't hire her because she was young. And now I kind of kicked myself because I could have got her a year earlier.
But
she went from being an employee and a shelf stocker and things to being my store manager. She's also a buyer for the store. She does a lot of that. She manages our website and does a lot of our marketing as well. So she is a find because, you know, at my age, I don't understand all this Facebook, Instagram stuff.
Oh, you do.
You do, too.
She does all that for me.
So when you met her, she was just 17, you know what I mean, and the way she looked was way beyond compare.
Oh, geez, there we
You'll never dance with another because you saw her
standing
there.
Yes.
There you go. You know, she is a big Beatle fan, too, and George is her favorite, just like me, so we bonded on that, too.
We have some texts coming in at 312-981-7200, and hi, Steve and Johnny. Tom Lounge's Record Bin is such a great store. We love having them here in Hobart. I'll definitely stop in and say hello if you both come in there. So Chuck says if we come in, he'll come in. So we're thinking maybe on your fifth anniversary when you have that parking lot party, maybe we can make it out there.
We may just have to come out there. When is that going to be, in July, or when's that going to be?
We're still trying to figure it out because I have to deal with the landlord and the people that share the parking lot and the city and make sure we get everything lined up. Mm-hmm. But, we're definitely going to do a big throwdown. We're going to have a wang dang doodle, as Coco might say.
That's right. Yes. In fact, there was a release for Record Store Day, a special release of Coco Taylor's first Alligator record.
I didn't catch that.
I think Coco, and I think there was a couple other things that Alligator put out.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Coco song, I couldn't believe Wang Dang Doodle is like 50 years old.
Yeah.
I
know.
Slap upside the head. Also, if you would please take a moment and go back to the business of grams when you're talking about records. I mean, people buy what they want to buy because they want to hear a particular song or they're fans of a particular group. But if they're real purists, what are they looking for? A listener says, what do we know about this Graham nonsense?
Well, if you remember, as I'm sure you do, the 60s and 70s, records were all over the place as far as quality, thickness.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
You could get I think it was Camden from RCA, and you could basically bend them like a taco shell, and they wouldn't break. And then there were other ones that were super thick and fragile. They came in all thicknesses and textures. And it was like all over the board. Every pressing plant, every label had different divisions of different records of quality. A lot of them wound up being the cheaper versions.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the K-Tel albums, for instance.
That's right.
We all know those.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you made me think of one of the most disappointing experiences. There's a guitar player named Joe Sgro. His last name is spelled S-G-R-O. Great guitar player. I bought his album, got it home, was able to play the album once. The next time I tried to play it, it was such poor quality vinyl. I couldn't believe it. But you're right. There was such a... It was really a wide range of what's good and what's bad, and you had no clue. I think the only thing was at London Records that you were pretty sure they had a pretty good quality of vinyl that they were using.
Right, especially the European printings back
then.
The Stones and all the early stuff, exactly. One of the things, people say, K-Tel Records, they were great because you got, 30 songs on one LP. But if you look at them, the bandwidth was so narrow. You'd have a 3-minute, 4-minute song in the space of a quarter inch. And when the grooves are that close, you're not getting a lot of sound. The wider the grooves, the more music in the grooves. And the needle rides on that, and you pick up more ambience and more sound. Wow. And that's why the 180 gram is really, according to what I understand, the engineers and experts in the audio fields feel that's the optimum weight because the grooves are wider, there's more vinyl, And if you notice, you were talking about the Israeli Gears and some of the early albums. A lot of those, when we bought them back in our teen years, they were single discs. They were one album.
Yep.
Now you're finding a lot of these same albums, Hendrix, whomever, come in two vinyl LPs. They're four sides, but it's the same songs because they're putting two songs or three songs on one side instead of five or six.
Right.
Because the grooves are wider.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, you are the owner and operator and the founder of the Record Bin Stores. A listener wants to know if you are the Tom Lounges that worked at Hegwisch Records.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been in the music business since my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
I actually managed a store called Highland Records in my high school years. And then I went to Cal City Hegwisch, and I wound up working there. I worked at Hammond Record and Tape Exchange. I worked at different branches of Hegwisch. There were seven locations at one time, and I worked at most of them at some point. Then I went on to also work as an import buyer and assistant manager at Woodmar Records in Hammond at the Woodmar Mall.
Yeah.
And eventually we opened a new Woodmar in Schererville, and that was my store. And then the big boxes came along and killed the music industry.
Yeah.
Back when I lived in Calumet City, I used to go to Hegwisch Records. That was such a special record store.
George was a really great guy.
Yes.
He used to get material for us that we couldn't get anywhere else. He was really wonderful about that. But you see, somebody's out there going, I know this Tom dude. Yeah, and you can find him at the Record Bin, and you can find him in Hobart, and you can find him in Michigan City, Indiana. And, Tom, it's always a great excuse to talk to you on the radio, but let's put our heads together off the radio and talk about this party sometime for the fifth anniversary.
And tell Riley she can come back anytime. You maybe.
Oh, Riley's always welcome, right? I know.
Yes.
That's the response we get on her everywhere.
Got it. Thank you so much, Tom. Happy Record Store Day.
All right, thank you much. I'll be in touch, and we'll talk more about getting together.
All right, thank you.
More coming up at WGN.
I was just doing a little bit of math. So in Stephen Johnny 1.0, we were up to 6,250 shows.
Right.
Tonight on Stephen Johnny 2.0, we are show number 16. And it was way back on 1.0 when we met this fabulous author who would run down to the Tribune Tower, and I think she literally would run down to the Tribune Tower and spend some late nights with us on the radio. And it's been forever since we've had a chance to talk to this woman who...
She is an internationally known best-selling author of seven novels and four short stories. We loved her Emma Caldridge series. That's how we first met her.
That's right. Yes. And remember, we were casting the movie when she came in to join us. She also, I remember the night she joined us to talk about working on the Robert Ludlum series.
Yep.
And she joins us tonight on the radio to tell us what she's been up to all these years since we last spoke. She is Jamie Frevoletti.
Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi there.
It's so great to talk to you again.
You too. I said you literally ran. I think one night you did run over because you are like a distance runner. And you said you came in wearing your running garb and it was like midnight. And you said, I just decided to jog down to the station, right?
It was really fun times. We go down to station, stay out all night.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I remember when we first talked to you, too, you were still working as a lawyer in Chicago,
You're still doing that?
I was. Correct. No. Once I got the Ludlum contract, I had to write two books a year, so I put the law on hold for a bit. And honestly, I do miss it, but I haven't gone back.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're the only person I've heard admit to putting the law on hold.
For a while I was doing you have to do continuing legal education when you're an attorney, and for a while I was doing it, and I did it for copyright law because it helps with the books. But otherwise, I wasn't using it enough to really continue. So it's the license, you just tell them I'm not working for the moment.
Is home still Chicago for you?
I beg your pardon?
Is home still Chicago for you?
It is. So I'm in Chicago most of the time. I do spend several months a year in California now near Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So I do tend to split my time a bit. Some of that is because I'm going to be taking a screenwriting course and maybe teaching out there next year. So
good.
Yeah.
Good.
So. But I'll never leave Chicago. Chicago's home base for me.
Yeah.
Good. Has working on the Ludlum books, has that been a little different way of doing things for you? Because you're kind of on a schedule. If you have to do X number of books per year. Am I right about that?
Yeah, so what you do is they hire you and they kind of give you an idea of the characters. You have to read all of his characters. I did the Covert One series, which is not Jason Bourne. It's a separate series, John Smith. And, you know, I love doing it. The estate gives you some of the books. I read them. And then you have a kind of conference about what they want to do, what they want to see in the next book. And what's nerve-wracking is they wanted outlines. They wanted you to outline the book and, you know, present an outline. Well, I don't outline my books. I literally sit down with an idea and I start writing. So, and for me, the fun of it is I don't know what's going to happen next. So I'm kind of enjoying the book along with, you know, anyone who's reading it. Well, they wanted an outline and I was really pretty panicked. And I remember I had just won an award. I won a Barry Award for the Emma Caldridge series. And I stepped off the stage and my agent ran up to me and said, you know, the estate of Robert Ludlum, all the people for the estate are in the bar and they'd like to buy you a drink and talk to you. And I thought, oh, this is great. And then they lowered the boom about the outline. So that was not so great. So I ran upstairs and I wrote the first 25 pages of what ended up being the Janus reprisal. And I sent it to them with my fingers crossed and thought, well, this will give them an idea of where I'm headed. I gave them a little log line, and they went for it. I never had to write an outline for the
Ludlum. Wow.
Because,
yeah, I was real happy about that.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in one of our early conversations, you talked about how as you're writing, you kind of enjoy the journey because as you flesh out the characters, they kind of speak to you and tell you where they want to go, and that was part of the fun adventure for you.
Yes, that is the fun for me. And sometimes it does get, in the writing world, we call it a pant, you know, you write by the seat of your pants, so you're called a pantster, and other people are outlining. And, you know, we always have long, we're in the bar, a bunch of writers, and we all start discussing, well, I like outlining. Some people do a hybrid version. They write for a while, and then they really kind of sit down with the plot. I do have a new manuscript I'm working on that I do have to, it's been written, but now I have to really plug things in. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different way of doing it. I like just writing because I can go for a run, and while I'm running, I can think, oh, what would happen next? And it keeps me, you know, it keeps me interested. Not that outlining wouldn't, it's just that's a bit more structured than I really need in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about a new project that you're involved in that I absolutely love, and it's just, it's a whole different thing.
And, it is.
And I think a lot of people are going to find it really enjoyable.
We're talking with Jamie Frevoletti here on WGN Radio.
Time to suspend disbelief and walk beside Artemisia into a strange and unique land. A land that shouldn't exist, but does. A place not known to Artemisia, where people want to kill her kind. A place where her sister and many others have disappeared. You'll hold your breath as Artemisia tries to survive in this wild new land and understand an insane enemy who doesn't adhere to the Geneva Conventions. An incredibly imaginative story to make you wonder about infinite realities.
Just to give you a little taste of Infinity by our guest, Jamie Frevoletti. And Infinity is actually a short story. Jamie, tell us about this whole Infinity project and how you got involved in it.
Yeah, so it's really great. It's an anthology put out by Suspense Magazine Publishing. So Suspense Magazine's been around forever. If anyone loves suspense, thrillers, mysteries, you gotta subscribe to it. It's a digital as well as, I think they have a maybe quarterly magazines to come out. And they contacted a bunch of the authors from friends of mine, Catherine Coulter, an editor, who edited the whole thing. She's an amazing writer. And she agreed to edit a series of short stories written by a bunch of different thriller, mystery, and cozy mystery authors.
She said, to believe in infinity means you must acknowledge that all things are possible. And Suspense Publishing has brought this group of best-selling authors to express their beliefs in those endless possibilities using the art of mystery and suspense. But your take on infinity is fascinating. Please tell us about the backstory.
Yeah. I love this.
How you imagine infinity.
So it was interesting. They just gave us one word. They said infinity. What does infinity mean to you? And I remember I was sitting and reading a lot of science journals at the time. It was during COVID, so there wasn't much else to do except read science journals. And I was reading about the couple of things. The new dark sky telescopic pictures hadn't come out yet, but I had read that a bunch of scientists had seen were analyzing neutrinos. And neutrinos are these little things that come from the sky. You can't see them. They're kind of smaller than atoms. And they usually come from the sky downward. And apparently in Antarctica, they had some sort of equipment there. And they noticed that some neutrinos were actually coming up from the Earth. This was a different, and physics cannot explain this, right? So, of course, a lot of the scientists started discussing, what could this be? Could this be a biological byproduct that is degrading differently and making these neutrinos act in a way that no one ever expected them to act? Why is science not explaining this? And then, of course, one poor scientist actually did say, well, they're coming, maybe they're acting exactly as they should be. They actually are coming down from the sky, but from a parallel universe.
Oh, jeez.
I love that.
I loved it. Oh, my God, Steve, Johnny, I went crazy on this thing. I was reading it going, okay, I felt sorry for the scientists because the press only picked up, of course, the parallel universe side of it. But apparently the ice in Antarctica might also be sending these neutrinos in a different direction, but they're not sure. So I sit in there thinking, well, time would run backwards. Let's say the neutrinos are coming from a parallel universe. What would that look like? And that's what started me thinking about what I would write for the Infinity Anthology. And it's my first kind of dipping my toe into sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And I loved writing this short story.
Your mind is a fun place to hang out, isn't it?
No, it's crazy. I was also at the same time, I don't know if you guys do any of this, but I was also watching a lot of Netflix like everybody else sitting at home, and I got hooked on K-dramas, Korean dramas, and I was watching these K-dramas, and there was one that had a parallel universe theme, and so it was all kind of fitting, and I thought, oh, I got to try this, and that's where Infinity came from.
That's the universe telling you to go there when you got hooked on K-dramas.
Yeah.
And Steve read that little paragraph of The Disappearing Place, which is the name of your story in the anthology, and we wrestled with the pronunciation of the main character's name. Is it Artemisia?
Did I say it correctly?
Artemisia. Yes, Artemisia. I went back to ancient Greek and Roman times and looked into famous female mathematicians, and there was one, Hypatia. She's a very famous mathematician, and I decided that I would use her, and I would build a whole world around the story of Hypatia and Artemisia, and that's how some of those ideas came forward.
Do you
hate to say too much because it's a short story. I don't want to give the final thing away.
Exactly.
But it is kind of a place. It's called The Disappearing Place, and it's kind of people who end up in this parallel universe.
Mm-hmm. Do you do all of your own research, or do you have people who kind of help you with it?
My own.
Good. The reason I'm asking is because there is another, I won't mention him, a very famous author who puts out tons and tons of books per year, who apparently has a staff of people who do all of his research. But I love the idea that you're hands-on and you know what you need out of this and you want to get it yourself. I love that.
Yeah, and I'm always looking for something a little bit different. Like in the Janus Reprisal, the first Ludlum book, I had found out about Bitcoin. And that was before Bitcoin was a thing. And I remember trying to explain to the Ludlum estate, you know, it's this money It doesn't really exist as money. It's on the internet. It's called Bitcoin. I'm going to call it kilo dollars, but I'm going to make it a... And I remember at the time you could actually mine for Bitcoin, believe it or not, if you had a strong enough computer. At the time, you could do it fairly inexpensively. Now, you couldn't buy anything with Bitcoin except maybe, I don't know, you could buy socks. You could buy socks on Etsy or something.
Yeah.
But I remember telling the agent of the estate of Robert Ludlum, Henry, I said, Henry, I'm thinking I'm going to do this. It's based on some Japanese man who created it that nobody's ever met, and to this day no one's ever met him. But I just think it's a very cool concept. And I remember him saying, I don't know if you should get involved in that. It sounds kind of hinky. Now I wish I had bought some of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I always look for something a little bit like interesting, a little bit cutting edge, and then I try and imagine a story around it.
I want to mention, we've been talking about Infinity, this wonderful anthology, but we should mention where some of the proceeds of this anthology are going. This is a wonderful, the way this has worked out. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, it's going to breast cancer research and awareness, and I just think it's wonderful. I think a lot of us put up, did this for that particular thing, and I think... It's a type of breast cancer, I think, has touched everyone at some point or another, someone in the family, someone they know. And so it really feels like it's an appropriate thing for, it's also where all of women in this anthology just happened to turn out that way. And, and this felt like a very good cause.
Absolutely. And again, we got our copy on Amazon. So if you want an actual... You want to hold it in your hand, kind of copy, and it's substantial too. So you got a lot of reading material.
In fact, this is one of those. I haven't finished it yet. I'm about halfway through the book, and there's some wonderful stories.
You leave it beside the bed. And Catherine Coulter, when I saw that she was the editor of this, I said, "Wait a minute, I know that name. I think that woman has written almost 100 books. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, but."
She's remarkable. She's one of my favorites. And when I found out she was going to be attached to this project, I said, oh, yeah, whatever you want, I'm in. I just thought that was great. And I think my friend J.T. Ellison, who also wrote a short story, J.T. writes with Catherine on one of her FBI series, I think.
Yes.
J.T.'s a wonderful person. She's a wonderful writer, so she's involved as well. So it was really, and I know Daryl Woodgerber, I know a lot of these authors, so it was really a fun and really very satisfying project to be a part of.
And again, for a good cause. So if you want to get your copy, just type in Infinity on Amazon, and it will pop right up, and it says Catherine Coulter, but then you will see that Jamie's story is right there, Disappearing Place, and it's substantial. And we're kind of dancing around it because I don't want to give anything away either.
I know.
And having one copy of the book in the house was funny because Steve would say, well, can I have the book? And I go, yeah, I guess so. Give me 15 minutes and you can have the book. So.
And I also like the different take that every author, you know, the different spin that they put on this Infinity. I thought it was really cool. Some went back on the dual timeline. What was it? I think it was Nazi, World War II, and then that current timeline. I just thought some of it was really very cool how everyone had a different view.
Yeah, they're ghost. Yeah. There's, there's one that's all about ghosts, and you're absolutely right, all under the heading of Infinity. Jamie, can you sit tight for just a minute? We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk just a few more minutes about being a writer. And it's just exciting for us to catch up with you after all those years.
Yes, it's been great.
You can check out Jamie's website. It's, oddly enough, jamiefravoletti.com.
And stay with us here on WGN Radio.
Broadcasting tonight from... WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida, from the Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, from the Palatial Studios.
And that's no joke. We've got all kinds of elbow room in here. We got people in here. We're not sweating. We're very fortunate to be in the studio tonight, and we're happy to have you guys with us because we have a big show that takes us up till 2 o'clock in the morning, and right now we're talking with internationally best-selling author of 7 novels and 4 short stories. She's our friend Jamie Frevoletti, and we first met Jamie Frevoletti when she came out with a book with a character named Emma Caldridge. And Jamie, you probably recall how I gushed about I had to cast that movie for you, remember?
Yep.
I do recall. Yes, I
and
do.
Emma was going to be Sandra Bullock. I said, I see her. I know. We've got to do this movie, Jamie. I was so excited. I still love that series of books.
Yeah, that's that. You know, the last one that came out on that was Blood Run, and I do have another one in play. It's about, 20,000 words. The average thriller is about 95,000 words.
Wow.
So I think it's at 20. But I have another manuscript I'm working on that is taking precedence at this point. But I will get back to Emma Caldridge. Those were, I want to do another one of her novels about her.
I have the dumbest question anyone is going to ask you.
No.
How long does it take you to write an average book? And the reason I'm asking, Johnny and I wrote one book. We're now working on our second book. Now, granted, these were reality-based books. Our first was a memoir about Les Paul, and it took us well over a year to do that. Our second book is...
It's going to take a lifetime.
Yeah, it seems like we've been working on it for about 2 years.
Yes.
But you're putting out multiple books.
Year.
How the heck do you do that, lady?
You know, it's kind of interesting. First of all, congratulations on the books.
Thank you.
It's a lot. I don't think 2 years is very long at all. My first manuscript took about a year and a half to write, and then I had another year to rewrite it. And then that one's on the shelf. It didn't sell, and also when I look back on it now, I can see that it's good, it's got flashes, but it was definitely a first try. So I think now, once I got into the swing of thing, I can pretty much write a novel in a year. And then when I was doing Ludlum and Emma Caldridge back-to-back, that was a little challenging. I was doing a book every 6 months, at least getting my drafts into the editors, get it to one editor, start the next one, get it to that editor, and then go back to the changes on the first. That's a pretty challenging schedule, but mm-hmm. that's why I no longer practice law at that point. I had to make a choice. I had two small children, and then I had, you know, all these books to write, and so I decided to write full-time.
Isn't one of the keys to writing similar to when you go into a recording studio, knowing when to stop?
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned recording studios. So my manuscript I'm working on now, I'm very excited, is a music manuscript. It's about a music producer who comes off the road, gets to his studio, it's trashed, and his producer's missing. And I collaborated with a music producer and songwriter and guitarist. The main character in that manuscript is a guitarist, a shredder. And I watched the. We have a bunch of songs that go along with this book, almost kind of like a Daisy Jones and the Six that just came out.
Okay.
But in this manuscript, the songs are key to some of the story, and I won't go any further with it. That was interesting to watch musicians because you get the sense that they have the same kind of process. They start out with a draft, they start with an idea, and then they start to flesh it out. What was fascinating to me about the process of the music writing is, I would say, you know, can you put this in there, can you backmask something? So backmasking is when the words are backwards. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with all the computers now, they can do so many interesting things. So yeah, I think there is a certain point where you have to stop. You have to say, okay, here's the story, here's the music, we're going to have to stop and, you know, see how this plays, because you could go on forever and the ideas just keep coming. Mm-hmm. And every draft seems to be better than the last, so you could continue to make this book better and better and better, but at some point you do have to present it to your agent, and they have to get it to the editor. So you do have to make a hard cut.
You have to promise us when that book comes out that you will come back on with us, and we will talk about the book and play some of the
music,
songs from the book.
Oh,
that's
cool. Well, it's interesting, because I turned that one also, I just finished writing that as an immersive concert, which is kind of a theater concert. Mm-hmm. I have a collaborating venue here in Chicago in the Austin neighborhood, and we put up for an artist grant in the Chicago cultural affairs, and I'll know about that in about a month. So I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Oh, please
do. If it goes out as an immersive concert, it will be done sometime in October. So it's about 6 months away.
That is so
and then
cool.
And then the manuscript will send out on submission in August. That would become a regular book. You wouldn't need to hear the music to read the book. You'll have access
to it. But I want to.
Well, it was really fun because I kept telling the guitarist, you know, shred some more. I wanted kind of an old school Led Zeppelin, you know, the Led Zeppelin, the old school shred.
Sure.
Yeah,
A little bit of blues. I wanted a blues kind of influence, old school guitar, that kind of heavy guitar sound. And they really did, these young musicians did a fantastic job. We have a couple of songs in Spanish. It's just fabulous, and it was really a lot of fun. So I'll definitely let you guys know when that one's coming into play.
And in the meantime, people need to get their hands on this book that we're so happy that it came up on our Facebook feed, because it said, oh my gosh, we have a chance to talk to Jamie Frevoletti again. Infinity is a book.
And you know, it's fun too, because with Infinity, I feel like, or at least my short story, The Disappearing Place, you know, as I finished that story, I thought, there's room to make that into a manuscript too. Mm-hmm. I could take those two characters and have them go in search, you know, of their missing. And I thought, you know, that might be one of my next projects, you guys. I may just end up doing that.
I'm glad to hear that, because without giving anything away, that was one of the thoughts I had reading that. Oh, I want to know more about this.
Yes, where they're going.
So please do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I will. You know, I will. I've got so many things on my plate. One thing I'm never short of is ideas. It's just time to put it all on paper. That's the issue.
Yeah. And what a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a curse. Yeah. That's a blessing. And thanks to Suspense Publishing for reintroducing us to you after all these years, Jamie. And again,
thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing. I'm just so thrilled that we got to reconnect with you. And Infinity is a terrific short story, The Disappearing Place in the Infinity Anthology. And again, I checked, and it's available on Amazon just as we purchased ours, and you will thoroughly enjoy it. And yeah, you got our numbers. Stay in touch with us, okay?
I would love to. And thank you. It's so great to talk to you both. Congratulations.
It's wonderful to talk to you.
About everything.
Oh,
it's
thank wonderful. You, Jamie. Same to you. And we'll talk soon.
Take care.
Take care. Bye bye now.
Stay with us. More coming up at WGN. Yes, it's Steve and Johnny at WGN. Who else would do that?
And that's the Pickles song.
Now, dear?
Yes?
Why would we be playing the Pickles song?
Because I'm really bummed that we're not in Chicago next Saturday for Pickle Fest. I didn't know we had a Pickle Fest in the city.
Pickle Fest?
Yes! Chicago's Pickle Fest. You're going to get to have drinks like pickle vodka.
You're going to get to be pickled.
You will get pickled, yes. There's going to be all kinds of music. Quite seriously, this event will be Saturday at the Cubby Bear. So this is a Pickle Fest with live music and lively beverages.
I guess.
You know what? I have a hard time talking when I'm thinking about pickles, because I get that salivary action going on.
Yeah.
And so you can get tickets. All you have to do is Google Pickle Fest Chicago, and all the information will come up about the event next weekend from noon to 5. And the closest I can come is here in Panama City, actually in Panama City Beach. I have a fabulous drink at Boondocks Restaurant.
And if you ever come to Panama City Beach, and for those of you who don't know, yes, we're live on WGN, but we're coming to you from the studios of WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida, at Gulf Coast State College. And if you ever come down to the Gulf Coast of Florida, you have to go to Boondocks Restaurant in Panama City Beach.
And ask for my favorite drink, and that would be the pickle margarita.
And I let her have as many as she wants, because she's coming home with me.
The pickle margarita is so good. If you've ever had, see, I'm having a hard time talking because I got all this spit in my mouth. Forgive me. Does that sound good to you, Caleb?
Quite frankly, no.
No? And if you have to watch your sodium, you probably don't want to do the pickle margarita, because it's. By the time we got to the car, remember I said, do we have any water in this car? I'm so thirsty. I drank water all night long because it was a ginormous pickle margarita.
Karen, have you ever had a pickle margarita?
Look at that face.
No.
No.
I didn't know they were a thing, honestly.
Well, in my world, they're a thing. Pickle, everything is a thing. Because in our house, we have jars of pickles in our refrigerator, and they've got no juice. And those are my pickles because I've drank all the juice out of them.
3 o'clock in the morning,
oh,
I will wake up because I hear footsteps going out to the kitchen. The refrigerator door opens, and Johnny is drinking pickle juice.
Great for leg cramps.
I've heard that.
Yes, very good. If you get a Charlie horse in your leg, if you can crawl to the refrigerator and get pickle juice, you will be surprised. In fact, athletes will drink pickle juice. You can get little cans of it that you can take out on the field and, you know, keep it in the, I guess, in your knapsack in case you get a cramp in your leg while you're playing football.
By the way, for people who are wondering, Karen is,
yes,
Karen Morris, who is the host of Hello, Karen.
Hello, Karen.
WKGC, and she's been nice enough to have us on her show while we were down here.
Yes, and she was the subject of a podcast that was posted on Thursday, mm-hmm, from our visit to her show.
Yes.
And yeah, we always appreciate when you let us come in here and hang out with you and make us sound like we're normal.
Or as close to normal as we ever get.
Kind of, sort of normal. Yes.
So now your name is going to be changed from Hello Karen to Pickled Karen.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No.
Gracious. I don't know about that.
No. You're going to reputation. I happened to, at one time, I was the president of Pickle Packers of America. Not everyone can say that, but.
And that was also a cause for some interesting reactions
from
guests at some of the parties we would have. Because.
Okay. Back up. Have you ever wondered if people come to your house and they open your medicine cabinet? Does that bother you? You think that maybe they do open your, Caleb?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
And you're thinking, maybe I should put something in there to worry them, right? Keep
Ooh.
Them on their toes.
I like your
so, style. I was talking about my love of pickles very often on the radio, mm-hmm, because I was known to even just bring a jar of pickles for my lunch.
Sure.
And I would eat the pickles throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still having a hard time talking.
Yeah, the more you talk, I'm starting to.
I know. So the Pickle Packers of America, at the time that I was on the radio in Aurora, they were in St. Charles, and they contacted me and said, wow, you are just the greatest ambassador for our product, as if pickles need an ambassador. But I said, that's me. What are you going to do for me? They said, well, you'll be receiving a little something in the mail. And I was expecting a press package. What I received was a 4-foot-tall pickle.
Literally. Now,
a hard plastic.
A 4-foot-tall pickle.
Hard plastic, not a blow-up. A hard plastic pickle that if you put your arms around it, both arms would have to go around this big, fat pickle.
Now, I'm going to circle back to the question of, do you wonder what people look at when they're in your house? So, In our house, we had at that point, we had in our bathroom, there was a bathtub, and there was just a
shower curtain.
And we wondered how many people would actually look behind that shower curtain.
So
the 4-foot pickle went in the bathtub. We pulled the shower curtain.
And then we knew the people who pulled back the curtain.
The people who would come out of the restroom looking like, what?
Yeah.
But
of course,
then,
the can of Crisco on the edge of the tub,
yeah,
also was a little troubling to them.
Well, and then we also used the pickle. there was a morning TV show that Bob Surratt used to be the host of, and they would interview people.
In bed.
So, we do the all-night show on WGN. Bob's on in the morning. He goes to interview us one day, and supposedly it was our house. He didn't know that we had gone to a place called the Sybaris,
which is kind of a sexy motel you go to,
yeah,
on your, if you, yeah.
And
with mirrors on the ceiling.
So right next to the bed, there was this jacuzzi with the pickle, but then there were the straps hanging from the ceiling. With the
that are there all the time, yeah, in the Sybaris, and then the harness in the closet, and the furry handcuffs.
And we made them think this was our house and our bedroom.
Because I didn't want strangers
coming
to my bedroom.
Well, then I had puppets along.
You had puppets all over.
Yeah.
So when we got back to the radio station, they treated us differently.
They did.
Because the staff didn't know either.
They thought, That was their house. Did you see what they have in their house?
Well, I remember one engineer came to us and said, "What are you making? You've got like a swimming pool in your bathroom."
Yeah,
and
your
I thought,
point is
that's what troubles him, not the fact that we have a pickle and a harness and all this other stuff.
Well, I mean, clearly that makes sense why you're doing the overnight show.
That's right. It all fit in our world, and I don't think to this day that Bob Surratt knows that we were at the Sybaris.
I don't think he does,
because we just. With a straight face, we were.
So don't nobody tell them.
And wasn't our bed a heart-shaped bed? Well, of course it had satin sheets. I remember that, because you got to have satin sheets in a motel like that, which is a wonderful place to go.
Is this motel by the night or by the hour?
Well, it actually can be.
I think either or.
Yeah.
Full service. Full service.
I think call this a no-tell.
So to speak.
It's a no-tell motel is what we call it. Oh, yes. So that's the tale of the pickle. And I should be the queen of the pickle fest, but no, I'm in Florida, where it's in the 80s and sunny every day. All right. Coming up tonight, we're going to be talking about a little television update. There's rumor that there's going to be a new Big Bang Theory. A new television
show. Or a new spinoff. Not necessarily a new Big Bang Theory, but
a
new
a spinoff
Big Bang
of
Theory.
It.
A spinoff,
So what's it going to be? Is it going to be the kids or the cast members? Or the woman who should know everything that's out there on the streets about this story is the woman who's written the definitive book on the Big Bang Theory. And Jessica Radloff will join us. And she also had a chance to be at the Carol Burnett birthday taping. That's where she met Cher. And that taping is going to be broadcast later this week, next week.
I think, isn't it tomorrow night?
I'll have to check that out. But we also saw Carol Burnett on one of the late night shows, and she was,
she's just
at 90.
So good.
Scary good.
Speaking of at 90, did you see, and I know I'm segueing into TV land, did you see where, now I blacked out on his name. He's going to be in a soap opera.
Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke,
Yes.
He's like 93 years old. He's going to be doing Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, God bless him.
I saw that earlier on Facebook.
Yeah. I think if he shaved the beard, he would look really a lot younger. Because he's still dancing every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get to be that age, you do anything you want to do. I don't care. It's all yours.
Whatever works.
But stay with us. We will talk about TV, and we're going to have some computer talk, too, coming up.
Yeah, a little later, Patrick Crispin will join us, and we'll try to solve some computer problems. And we should mention, too, we have a bunch of things going on coming up next week. We're going to have author Michael Lister will join us. Tommy Emmanuel will join us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk cars with Tom Appel. Don Perlman, a name that you know from Chicago News. Don is going to join us. He has a different hat that he's wearing. And Lisa McClowry will be joining us. Yep. So that's some of what we have coming up. That'll be next week. And over the ensuing weeks, we've got Bill Anderson's going to join us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Bill Anderson from the Country Music Hall of Fame.
And we're going to introduce you to some more people down here that we think you should know. Some folks that you should know from the panhandle of Florida.
And I'm going to go for an audio. Andrew, have I talked enough? Should I stop now? Okay. More later. I can't hear that without, I don't know how many, it's like I have dueling episodes of the Big Bang start playing in my head. And we're joined now by a lady who knows everything there is to know about the Big Bang.
She is the New York Times best-selling author of The Big Bang Theory, The Definitive Inside Story. And that's how we met her, thanks to this book. Jessica Radloff joined us back in October, and the book just took off after that. She's a busy, busy lady. Jessica, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Jessica.
Oh, my gosh, my pleasure. I wish I could say I was out doing something really exciting, but I'm here at home just working on more Big Bang stuff and glamour work, too. So
Yeah.
It all worked out tonight.
Because you wear the entertainment hat for glamour, and that takes you to a lot of really interesting places that we have to talk about in just a few minutes. But
I have a confession, Jessica.
Yes.
Tell me.
I still haven't finished the book. It is, for anybody who doesn't know, this is a big book,
yeah,
and I love it. and I still haven't finished it because I'm savoring it.
And it's so big, it's hard to take to bed with you because if you fall asleep, it can hurt you when it falls on you.
Yep.
Seriously.
You'll wake up real quick.
That is hilarious. Oh, my gosh. That is too funny. I have to tell you, the other day I needed something to prop my computer up, and I just stacked four of the Big Bang Theory books on my desk, and it was wonderful. So, you know, there's a lot of great uses for it. But, yes, if you do drop it on your face while you're reading it in bed, it can hurt.
Or back in the day,
with a warning label.
Back in the day before front-wheel drive vehicles, when you needed something to help get your rear-wheel drive car through the snow.
You need to wait it?
Yeah, you need to wait it. You just put about four copies of the Big Bang Theory book in the trunk, and you're good to go.
Okay,
that is
Jessica.
Hilarious. Well, do you want to know a secret?
Yes.
And I haven't said this to anybody else, so you guys are kind of hearing it first, but I'm working on the paperback edition of the book now, which will come out probably at the end of this year, and there's going to be a lot more photos in there and everything, so I think the book is somehow going to get bigger.
Wow.
So it's going to be like people that remember phone books.
Yes.
I know. Well, you know, I was so lucky because I was given so many personal photographs from the cast and the producers, and as it is, my editor was so gracious to me in letting me put so many of them in the hardcover book. And to my surprise, like, would you be interested in doing more for the paperback edition eventually? And I was like, well, yeah, we have so many more that I couldn't fit in the first one. So I'm currently working on that. So, but maybe because it's paperback, you know, then it won't be as heavy, but I don't know. Maybe it's negated a bit by the fact that now there's going to be more photos in there.
That's
and,
right.
And material. I don't know.
Well, let's stick with Big Bang Theory because I was so excited when you were available to join us tonight because there's that talk of a spinoff of the show.
Yet another spinoff. What do you know?
Yeah.
I know. It's very confusing because I'm so flattered that everybody's been coming to me to say, oh, my gosh, what? Tell us, what's the tea on this? You know, is the Big Bang Theory being rebooted? Is there a spinoff? What's going on? Here's the lowdown. We don't really know. The announcement came on April 12th because HBO Max is going to be rebranded as just Max. And it was part of the Warner Brothers Discovery merger. So it's just going to be called Max now. The HBO part is being dropped. But it's still going to be the same service you love. And because they were making this big announcement and they were going to be talking about all the new exciting shows that are coming to the platform, they thought this would probably be a great opportunity to also announce that Chuck Lorre, who co-created and executive produced The Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon, you know, that there was going to be another show that exists in this world that's going to be coming to Max. So it was all part of this big announcement day for so many shows. But, of course, all the Big Bang Theory fans are like, what does this mean? You know, what is coming? What is the show going to look like? And the real answer is we just don't know yet. It's not going to be a reboot. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So we will not see the main characters you love being played by different people. That's not going to happen.
Good.
What I do think it's going to be, you know, the actual wording is Chuck Lorre is developing a new comedy series derived from the Big Bang Theory. So you can read into that a lot, but derived from it, I believe that's going to be, it's going to exist in this world in terms of we might get an appearance by some familiar characters. We may not, but there will be some aspects that are really rooted in the world we came to know and love, but there's no additional details yet. So it's all speculation.
But we don't think it's going to be as centered around the engineer who finally fixed the engineer who finally fixed the elevator. We don't think that's going to be the subject.
No, we do not. I joked with Chuck. I said I can't wait for Cinnamon's Day Out, the new adventures. And Cinnamon, of course, was the dog that Raj owned. You know, so I joked with him about that. There were many characters, though, in the Big Bang Theory world that you could absolutely do a spinoff with.
Well,
and I think that's what's exciting is to see what is going to happen.
Yeah, I actually hope that they decide to take the kids of the characters, and then we have the show of the children. So we see, the children of Penny. And we, okay.
And Leonard.
Yeah. And Leonard, and they could have some similar, or just be totally different. I think that could be so fun.
I have brain fade. I can't think of his name. The the guy who owned the comic book store and his girlfriend.
Oh,
I would love
Stuart.
To see a series with them.
Yes. And he just got married, too, in real life.
He did. Kevin Sussman just got married a few days ago, and it was funny. I was messaging with him, and I congratulated him, and I said to him, I said, what a great photo, and I accidentally put a question mark after it, and then I had to write him back and be like, I didn't mean a question mark at the end of what a great photo. I meant it with an exclamation point. It's such a great photo. And he's like, thank you. Kevin Sussman is so sweet. I would watch, honestly, I would watch any show with any of those guys, and I think that's what's going to be fun is to see, you know, Chuck is so brilliant as a creator, and he knows comedy so well, and he's working on another series for Max right now, what, you know, is HBO Max and will be Max, called How to Be a Bookie, and I'm excited to see what he does, and, you know, we also don't know, is this going to be a multi-camera sitcom again? Is it going to be a single cam like Young Sheldon is? Could it be existing in a world that's maybe 15, 20 years from now, so you could see the kids of the Big Bang Theory, like you just mentioned, or could it be a few years after, you know, the last episode we saw? There's so many possibilities, and I think it's kind of fun to speculate what it might be, but the truth is we just don't know yet.
Or could he encounter the Flash as the Flash is traveling through multiple universes?
That is so true as well. Yeah. I also think it would be fun to see, like, the adventures of Stuart and Bert. You know, remember Bert, who is the geologist on the show? Like, there's so many possibilities, because when you have a show that runs for 12 years, you know, you get a lot of great supporting players and guest stars and, you know, everything else. So it's all very tightly under wraps. I don't even know. There's nothing I know that I'm not sharing because I don't even know yet. And but it was all part of this big announcement day for Max. So it's exciting what's going to be coming down the pipeline, not just for Big Bang, but also just so many other shows, too. You know, so it'll be cool to see what develops over the next few months.
All right, sit tight. We're going to come back in just a few minutes with Jessica Radloff. There is a couple of things we've got to talk about. She was at the Carol Burnett birthday taping, and that's going to come up on Carol Burnett's birthday.
And so she got to meet Cher. But you're not going to repeat the comment. On that note, we got to take a break.
So stay with us on WGN.
I'm the only one who tears up when I start to hear that. Carol Burnett is such a treasure.
And I actually see her pull her ear in my head, my mind's eye, when I hear that song. And there is a really special show coming up on her birthday, her 90th birthday, April 26th. NBC will be carrying Carol Burnett's birthday celebration. And I know that our guest, Jessica Radloff, had an opportunity to be at that taping weeks ago. But Jessica, it was embargoed, right?
Yes, it was definitely embargoed. We couldn't talk about it. And I just posted a photo of me and Cher a few days ago on my Instagram, and people were freaking out. And it brought me back to that moment back in early March when we, you know, the special was being filmed, and we couldn't say anything really about it, but it was so cool. It was truly one of the most special evenings that I've gotten to be a part of.
Well, now,
and not that I did anything for it. I just was there to interview them, but it was really cool.
Does Cher actually perform on the show for Carol?
So Cher will be in costume in a Bob Mackie original. And she will be on stage. And I don't want to give away too much because you really need to see this. In fact, tomorrow on Glamour.com, my What to Watch guide will go up, and it has a bunch of the photos from this coming Wednesday show in there. And you just have to see what Cher is wearing, as well as so many others that are part of this big celebration. And it is so star-studded. I mean, you have Charlize Theron. You have, of course, Julie Andrews. You have Katy Perry. You have just all the legendary performers that are part of Carol's world, and it's just so extraordinary. So yeah, check out the photos tomorrow, but Cher is a big part of this, I will say that. And it's just like a variety show from the good old days. Like, it's not a roast. It's not like, yes, it's a birthday celebration, but it's more of a variety show that made you fall in love with what Carol did in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Vicki Lawrence.
Maya Rudolph will pay tribute to, you know, Scarlett O'Hara and, you know, all of these iconic characters and sketches that they did. So it's just so cool.
Please tell me Vicki Lawrence is a part of the show, too.
Oh, yes, Vicki Lawrence. I was trying to remember her name. Vicki Lawrence is absolutely a part of it. She was so wonderful to talk to. I love speaking with her. And Susan Lucci is also is also there. And Bernadette Peters. And one of the people that I got the biggest kick out of meeting that night was Aileen Quinn. Aileen Quinn played the original Annie in the 1982 film, you know, where Carol Burnett was Miss Hannigan. And meet Aileen Quinn, who I was obsessed with as a kid because I loved Annie. To see her now and to see her with Carol, it is just so wild. And I actually had Aileen make a little video to my sister and recite some of the lines as Annie. And it was just like one of those things where you just, like, you think to yourself, how lucky am I that I get to be a part of something that meant so much to me as a kid and meet these people now.
Oh, that is so cool. I'm happy for you, too. And I've got to say, you talked about the great outfits that people were wearing. You were styling, too, girl. I saw that picture of you.
You're so sweet. I got to say, it was Tory Burch and Longchamp. They they are so good to me. And, it was, you're very sweet to say that. So it's all them.
I'm not going to repeat what you said about how you felt about meeting Cher. But I am going to ask you, was meeting Cher the celebrity moment for you?
Yes, but I'll tell you a funny story. I met Carol Burnett and Betty White for the very first time back in January 2011 when NBC threw a birthday celebration for Betty for her 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I had actually gotten to meet Carol Burnett. And she is the one person that I actually did start to get a little misty-eyed when I first met her, because not only was I such a huge fan, but she looks and reminds me so much of my grandmother, who passed away some 25 years ago. So to see Carol Burnett up close and have her remind me of someone so special to me, it was such an out-of-body experience that was like, oh my goodness. So I met Carol, you know, back in 2011. I've since interviewed her a few times. I've been so lucky to sit down with her and Julie Andrews over the years, and that was so special. But then at this event, to actually get to meet and interview Cher, I was absolutely stunned, because Cher is somebody that does not need to do press. You know, a lot of people, when you're at a level that Cher is, you don't need to walk a red carpet. You don't need to talk to journalists. Like, you already have all the press. And Cher did that entire press line. And the same cannot be said of some of the other guests that were there that night, which I will not say who they are. But Cher did every single press person that was there. And I was so overcome by that, because to me, that was just the classiest thing that she could have done, that not only, I will not repeat the word that I said, you can go to my Instagram and you can read what I said, I did not just feel this way. I actually said to her that I wanted to, it starts with S-H, myself. I actually said that
said
to her.
Said that to her,
loud.
Yes.
And I will never forget, my dad, I told my parents this, my dad started laughing hysterically. My mother was like, that's all you could come up with to say to Cher, was that you wanted to blank yourself.
And that's your opening statement?
Right. What does one say to Cher? Like, honestly, what do you want me to say to Cher upon meeting her? I was so overcome. I could not believe that she was standing in front of me, this woman. That was the only thing that came out. And I got to tell you guys, I think she was so appreciative of the honesty that she was like, you know what? There's been times I've wanted to do that to myself, too. And she's like, I'm glad you're not, but I understand it. And I said, well, thank you. And you know, once I got that out of my, like, I got that over with, we could have a very normal conversation.
You relax.
And it was great.
Oh my God.
I could not believe for the life of me that this woman was standing in front of me. And I also don't ask a lot of people anymore to take photos with them because I just, you know, you learn every, celebrities are no more better than anybody else. You know, they do some really great, great, amazing things, and they have amazing talent, but they're no better than anyone else. But Cher is in a different league of her own. And I said to her, I was like, would you be okay if we took a selfie? And she's like, I'm fine with a photo, but I don't like selfies. Let's have someone else take it. I'm like, oh, nice. Even better. Okay.
Yes.
And that's what we did. And she was so lovely, you know?
Oh my gosh.
I just was so impressed by what she was willing to do and speak about when it came to Carol and to be there. And she walked the red carpet with Bob Mackie, too, the legendary costume designer. But yeah, I said what I said to Cher. And I, you know, part of me was like, I cannot believe I said that. And then the other one, I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. It's Cher.
That's right.
Like, it is Cher.
Hold your thoughts, because I want people during our break to check out those pictures on Instagram. And it's Jessica Radloff, R-A-D-L-O-F-F. And we'll come back and we'll talk about a show coming to the
14,
max.
Jessica Radloff 14.
Otherwise, 14.
There might be another Jessica Radloff.
Okay. We will come back with the real Jessica Radloff in just a few here on WGN.
See if we can get Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
If I could turn back time.
Take back those words. Anything ring a bell there, Jessica?
Singing, if I could turn back time, is actually what ran through my head when Cher was about to come up to me. And I thought to myself, I cannot start singing this song to this woman because she will throw me out. I do not have a good singing voice. So it was either singing to her or telling her that I wanted to, you know what, to myself.
No.
So I feel like I made the right decision because that would have just been an insult to Cher if I would have started singing that song. But I really didn't want to.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jessica Radloff. She's the New York Times bestselling author of The Big Bang Theory, The Definitive Inside Story. And she is the Glamour Senior West Coast Editor. And we're talking about Cher and all kinds
Carol
of
Burnett
celebrity
and,
stuff.
And please, can we talk about a show that you've got me so excited about? We are huge fans of Big Little Lies. And now we're going to get Love and Death?
Yes. Okay, you guys, I have to tell you, I've not been this excited about a show in so long. I know we hear a lot of, you know, people say things like, oh, this show is the next this or next that. Mm-hmm. I truly stand by my statement that Love and Death is the next Big Little Lies. It also comes from David E. Kelley, the prolific producer and writer, and Nicole Kidman is also a producer on this. And it stars Elizabeth Olsen, who's so brilliant. She plays a real-life woman named Candy Montgomery, and the series takes place in the late 70s, early 80s, and she was a church-going mother of two, married, doing everything that, you know, housewives back in the day were you know, considered they were supposed to do. She was friends with another couple, Alan and Betty Gore, and this is a true story, and it was actually made into a limited series by Hulu last year with Jessica Biel and Melanie Lynskey. But what people don't know, and I think this is going to start to come out, is that Love and Death actually went into production first. They were 2 months into production when the Hulu series was announced and then went into production. Hulu just managed to get it out faster, but Love and Death will finally premiere with 3 episodes this coming Thursday night. To me, this is the series to watch. It is so riveting. The performances are just incredible. I see Emmy written all over it. I can't say enough about it. It's just great entertainment, but also so complex in a way that David E. Kelley, you know, we've come to expect from him. It's just a really great series.
And it's going to be on HBO Max, or The Max, as we'll eventually call it. And
Yes, exactly. And I'm going to be moderating with the cast and the producers on Thursday night as well this coming week. I'm really excited to sit down with them. And also, I'll tell you something that was interesting was Tom Pelphrey, who was nominated for an Emmy for Ozark. He is also in this series. And, of course, a lot of people now know him. He's with Kaley Cuoco you know, from the Big Bang Theory and the flight attendant. They just had a daughter together. And Kaylee said to me, she said, just wait until you see the final three episodes of Love and Death and what Tom does, because he's in it in every episode, but it's not till those final three episodes where he just shines like you would not believe. So I'm so glad Kaylee told me that, because I'm going to sit down with him next week, too, to talk to him about his episodes. I mean, the whole cast is remarkable. They are so good.
Do we actually get multiple episodes the first week?
Yes, you'll get three episodes that drop this coming next Thursday, and then one a week after that. But it's going to be really hard to wait each week for what, like, because when I started to get going with the series, I just had to keep watching. It's
really
so good. Yeah.
And how many total episodes?
Sorry, say that again.
How many total episodes?
Seven total. And it's also directed by Leslie Linka Glatter, who is the Emmy-nominated director of Homeland and Mad Men. She directed the movie Now and Then in 1995 with Demi Moore, Rosie O'Donnell. So it's just, I mean, it's so star-studded. In addition to Elizabeth Olsen, you have Jesse Plemons, who's Oscar-nominated, Lily Rabe, and the whole Kristen Ritter's in it, too. The whole cast, Patrick Fugit, it's amazing.
Oh, boy. Because we were such huge fans of Big Little Lies. And I decided then that anything that Nicole Kidman touches, I'm like, okay, it's going to be good. And so she's executive producer of this.
And that was interesting, because when we went to Big Little Lies, I was a little hesitant to go to it. And I wasn't sure what Nicole Kidman would bring to the table. But boy, she terrific. And I'm all over this.
Well, yeah, I think you're going to say the same thing about Elizabeth Olsen, too. And even though this limited series, it is about a murder in a small town and between these two women and everything, the thing that is most interesting is just the secrets that people in these so-called perfect lives, as we know, no life is perfect, but, you know, appearances or you know, people make appearances to try to, you know, maintain this, you know, this illusion that everything is going great, and there's so many secrets underneath, and that's what's so fascinating about this show, that you'll relate a lot to Big Little Lies, is the appearances that everyone's trying to keep up, but below the surface, there's so much more going on.
Well, there's another limited series that we can't wait for from week to week, and we could stream it, but we don't choose to, because I just love waiting for Sunday nights on PBS to catch the latest episode of Marie Antoinette. Did you get into
that's
that?
Another great one.
Oh, my gosh.
I haven't been able to get into it too much, only because I've got so much to watch on my plate. But it is, PBS is such great period dramas, and they're just, they're so prolific and so wonderful. So, yes, it's a great series that I want to make more time for as well.
And again, this was a series that, it wasn't until about three quarters of the way through the first episode that I said, okay, because I kind of had to get past some of the British accents
and,
but the more I get into it, it is perfectly cast, beautifully directed and filmed.
Gorgeous.
And I can't
wait
for
the
next episode. Yeah.
But so what? You know, it's like the Titanic, we know how it ends, but it's just so beautiful. Yes.
Well, that's what's so great about so many of these series, is that we do, you know, especially ones that are based on a true story, we do know how it ends, but when they're great series, it doesn't bother you, because you just want to see it play out and find out more about it.
Well, we said that we would not keep you real long because you're very, very busy. You did say that on Sunday you're going to be posting your shows to watch in the upcoming week. Where would you
recommend? That'll be up at 9:30 Central Time tomorrow morning on Glamour.com, and you'll be able to look at everything that is worth watching for the week ahead, and there's so much great stuff. You know, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is coming to theaters.
Yes.
That is such a charming movie that I can't rave enough about. Of course, you have Carol Burnett and Firefly Lane's final episodes on Netflix are coming, and those are a doozy. It's so good. So there's a lot that is worth staying home for this next week.
And when I call in sick, I can say that Jessica Radloff said so.
Yeah.
I said, listen, I heard in the commercial break that it's 40 degrees right now in Chicago.
Yes,
so I
yes it is.
Given that it's that cold, You just should stay at home and just watch TV. I fully endorse this, you know?
Curl up. Yes.
When the weather gets nice, it's like you don't want to stay in. But yeah, this is perfect TV weather watching. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I'll tell you what to watch this week, all the times, where to watch it, all that good stuff.
Well, it's always just a pleasure to talk to you, Jessica. And I have to tell you a little bit behind the scenes. My husband enjoys calling you Jessica Rabbit.
And that's never happened to you before, I'm sure, Jessica.
This is so funny. Well, I'll have to tell you, you know, what's funny is that Melissa Rauch, you know, who played Bernadette on Big Bang and now is on Night Court, she always calls me J-Rad. That's her name. You know, so I'm used to all. I get all sorts of things, and it's fine. So...
I
will take Jessica Rabbit.
J Rat is cool. If you do my rap name, it's J Poo. Not quite as cool.
I like that. You both have such great names. I mean, Johnny and Steve, like, that's just perfect. Like, you guys were born to do a radio show. You were born to also have a variety show.
And you know what also is? It's perfect.
The check's in the mail, Jessica.
Because we look the same on the radio. So people often call me Stevie and they call him Johnny. And I say, look, we look the same on the radio. Yeah. So what? You know?
Well, I don't know if we ever told you. We were at an appearance one time and somebody came up to Johnny and said, gee, you don't sound blonde. And then they went over to me and they said, you sounded like you were bald with a mustache. And I always wonder, what the heck does bald with a mustache sound like?
Oh my gosh, that is really funny. Yeah, but people, you know what? I'm constantly amazed by how open people can be at times.
Yes.
Where do they get the guts to say this? Then again, I should be one to talk because look what I said to Cher. So, you know.
Yes. Yeah. But you know what? You get paid to do this. And thank you so much for being a part of our show. It's always just such a treat to talk to you and to get excited about things on television. And I hope we can do this again, Jessica. But go back to your computer and your TV and get back to work, girl. Okay.
Thank you so much, Johnny and Steve, and I adore you all. And anytime I'm home on a Saturday night working, I am happy to jump on the phone and chat TV and entertainment with you all.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Jessica.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Have a good week.
You too.
It's always fun to talk to her. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
So I have a question for you all. How would you feel if you sat down at your computer and you signed on to your bank account, and in your bank account you saw $28,285.25
that you didn't know was going to be there?
Right. Caleb's eyebrows shot up.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
that sounds like yesterday.
Well, the other day I signed onto my personal bank account and there was $28,285.25. And it was pending. And it was a wire transfer. And I panicked. I mean, I was shaking. And it just so happened that back at the end of the year, I had an occasion to call my bank. And they said, if you ever have any of these questions, and it was a nothing. I just had a question about what I thought might be a fraud. And they said, we're going to give you the bank's fraud number. So I had it my phone. So I called. I didn't get caught in menu hell. I was able to call somebody that picked up the phone and said, bank fraud line. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I quickly rattled off the fact that I just sat down and I have pending $28,285.25. And at the top, it showed my balance. And I was like, whoa, I have never seen that many digits in my balance. This is not our shared account. This is my account. Right. I'm like, oh, not that our shared account has that many digits, but...
Just take the money and run.
Well, you know what, Gabe? Guess what?
You'd be amazed how many people implied...
I had three people in banking tell me, well, you know...
If you just wait...
It would be yours.
Yeah.
These are people in banking telling me that the way it looks... Now, again, let me back up and say my concern is I am now the victim of some kind of scam. Somebody's going to try to get me to turn over $28,000 to them that they mistakenly put in my account. Well, the young lady I talked to at the fraud line said, well, all I can tell you, it's legitimately a bank transfer.
And didn't they also say there was a difference between a bank transfer,
and a check.
And if someone had said, oh, I put too much check, so send me back
that money, and the blah, blah, blah. You send that money back, you find out that their check was a bad check.
Right.
So she said, no, this doesn't smell like a fraud at all. This actually looks like somebody made a mistake. And I'm like, yes, get it out of my account. I'm getting really freaked out by this.
My wife would react the exact same way.
Well, let me tell you. Mm. She says, I can't help you. She says, I have to put you in touch with the wire fraud line. So now wire fraud gets on the line, and she's saying, calm down, ma'am, calm down. You've done nothing wrong. And I'm saying, I know I didn't do anything wrong. Do not look at me like that. And she says, I'm going to have to investigate this. And I was on the line, and I mean, I'm shaking, and I'm just looking at I keep refreshing my screen because I want to see if it's going to go away, right? And it's still pending. And it was 28 minutes before I called that it had been put in my account. So after almost a half hour, she comes back to me and she says, well, it is legitimate. You've done nothing wrong. And she goes on to say, you do realize that if you just waited, if you hadn't checked your account, you'd have that money in your account. And I'm like, I know, make it go away. So she says, it appears that there is a farming business in Wisconsin that has an account number that is two off of your account number, just two. And the person who sent this wire transfer from the bank in Nevada, paying this independent farm in Wisconsin, they inputted the wrong information. Now, of course, this bank that I'm talking to, my bank, is being pretty high and mighty about it because they aren't out any money.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything wrong. So they're like, oh, well, they made the big boo-boo.
Then we also had a friend who said, you know, you might want to do what the banks do and just say, we have to hold this
for 30 days.
to make sure everything's okay.
She said, just relax. Nobody has your account number. I can see what happened. We're going to send it back to the bank that originated the wire transfer. I said, fine. Guess what happened 48 hours later? I had two $30 charges for sending a wire and then sending the wire back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to get into phone hell because I had to get somebody to listen to me when I'm telling them I never sent a wire. I never sent one back. And eventually I got to somebody who kindly said, after saying to me, this is person number three, it looks like you could have kept that money. What is this world coming to?
No good deed goes unpunished.
I said, all I want is the $60 charges to come out of. Don't worry, ma'am. And again, I can hear the wheels in his head going round and round like, dang.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
I don't know what upset me more after I realized that I wasn't the victim of a scam. The fact that I had not one but three people say to me, you could have kept that money.
And these were bankers told you that.
Bankers.
And it was fortunate that you were able to get to a person at our bank who knew you, who said, okay, let me get these charges
to
go
away. And he did not suggest that I could have kept the money either. But, there were so many levels of this. We'll get back to it a little bit later, but that's the whole story. And the farm in Wisconsin hopefully got their money.
Yeah, we should almost call the farm and say, hey.
I wanted to say, could I come up and get some free veggies or something?
Yeah, it's
maybe a goat or something for 28.
What can I get? A baby goat.
Not a big goat.
Just a little goat. That makes all the difference
what
in the world.
What can I get for $28,000?
My wife wants a baby goat.
Don't baby goats grow up, though?
No.
Oh, you're talking about a pygmy boat.
I didn't want to scare him with that word. I was just saying baby.
I think it's time for her medication. We'll take a break.
Yes.
We'll be back with more. Stay with us at WGN. A computery guy and a computery gal. And
I love that little dude, that little computer sound.
That's fun. We are, if you're just joining us, we are coming to you tonight from the studios of WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida at Gulf Coast State College.
And we should mention, if you're just tuned in the last half hour, the other voices that you heard in studio with us Number one is our in-studio executive producer, Caleb Jordan.
Oh, I'm executive now.
I moved you up to that.
Yep. Thank
you. You know, you made the cut
after the promotion.
Because you stayed awake. So I'm like, yeah, he's now the executive producer in-house.
Also, so what does that make Tom?
Well, awake.
Tom is the kind of awake producer.
I'm the sort of awake producer. I do the early parts of the show. Okay,
that's right. Well, Tom Hoot's also with us in studio, and we're just tickled to be here doing the show. And we're thrilled that this happens to be our computer night because there is so much to talk to Patrick Crispin about. And you all know if you have a question, a computer question, there is no such thing
as a dumb computer question. And if you're new to this, Patrick Crispin is the Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. And that means he knows stuff.
Yes, he does. And you can text us or call us at 312-981-7200. How are you tonight, Patrick?
Woohoo! How's everybody doing?
We'll see.
Good.
Everything's right in my world now. I got woohooed.
We got woohooed. That's it.
Hey, Patrick, can we start with a listener who got in right after 10 o'clock and said, quote, there's no such thing as a stupid computer question except this one. And John goes on to write, when I go to a website more and more, I get a message like, this website uses cookies. Do you accept all cookies? Do you want to decline all cookies? Do you want to accept some of them? My question is, what should I do about cookies? Thanks. And that's from John, 773 area code. So I promised him, Patrick, that we would get to that question. So what do you do about cookies?
The short answer is, choose do not sell my information and just move on from there. There's a longer information because John has actually hit on a really interesting topic. What ends up happening, first of all, let's back up and explain what's going on with a cookie.
Yes.
It's a text file that's stored on your computer that websites can read if they have permission that really identifies you when you go back to a website. That's usually a first-party tracking cookie. And these are cookies that are there so that you don't have to enter your password the next time you go in. Mm-hmm. Those are perfectly fine. What's happened is, over the last 20 years, there have been third-party tracking cookies, which pretty much as you go from web page to web page to web page, it tracks you and reports back to an ad server saying, oh, this person just went to Gibson Guitars. Oh, this person just went to Guitar Center. Oh, this person just watched a video on YouTube on Les Paul. Let's sell him some ads about guitars. And a lot of people felt that that was just like a really terrible thing. It's like, I don't need to be tracked like this. So in about 2018, the European Union passed something called the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR. They also have an e-privacy directive that I think came out like 10 years earlier. But what really pushed it over the edge was the state of California. Back in 2018, the state of California passed a law that went into effect on January 1st, 2020, that said that sites have to notify you if they're collecting any personal information about you and give you the option of not having it collect. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is a lot of these sites are just going to say, oh, the heck with it. I'm going to make everybody give me permissions to do cookies. You can choose, if you have the option, do not sell my information when you get to those websites. Do not just close that little pop-up message, because closing up that pop-up message saying do you consent to this actually gives them consent.
What?
So they assume mm-hmm. that if you close that pop-up message, you agree that they can put cookies on your computer.
That's what
basically,
I do.
Basically, if you stay on the website, you have agreed to their terms.
Why am I just learning this? That's what I do. I'm thinking I'm being sneaky.
It's like, go away. And then the other ones, and these are the ones that I hate, are where it's like, okay, do not sell my information. And then they take you into this deep, dark list of things. And it says, okay, well, here are the type of cookies that we have. We have functional cookies. We have performance cookies. We have analytical cookies. We have marketing cookies. And
we have
targeting
cookies.
So let me ask you. Do you have... I usually do one of two things. Either I figure, okay, I'm going to be on this site while I'm looking for whatever I'm looking for. Yeah, I'll let them do what they want to do. Then I do one of two things. Either I will delete the cookies with whatever program I choose to use.
Yeah.
Or use a browser like Vivaldi that when you leave that site ain't going to follow you anyplace.
Safari and Firefox do the same thing. They block tracking cookies mm-hmm. by default.
And I think more browsers are doing that.
I tell you what I do, mm-hmm. And I actually do a double approach. There was a plugin for Chrome called the EFF Privacy Badger. It had some issues for a while. It is now really just kind of a blacklist thing. It's a good tool created by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And it's, in effect, a really easy way of you doing the cookie blocking without you know, having problems or you having to know anything. Just search for EFF Privacy Badger. What most people actually know a little bit about their web browser and are willing to tinker with the guts, there is something called uBlock Origin. uBlock Origin is an ad blocker that you can download and install, and they have lots of bells and whistles in there. And if you can go into uBlock Origin and then tweak it, you can get it so there's no tracking that's going on. You can actually get it so you never even see YouTube ads. But it requires a level of skill. And as John mentioned, you know, he's not really all up on computers. My reality is, for him, Safari, Firefox, don't worry about it. If you really are going to use Chrome, get the EFF Privacy Badger. Recognize it's not as powerful as it used to be, but it still works.
It still works. And don't do as Johnny does and just think you're being smart by ignoring it. I feel like I've learned something.
That. Yeah, it's like, no, you're giving them permission.
Wow.
We have to break, but just before we do, what do you think about browsers like Tor?
I know of them. I don't use them that much. My concern is almost all the browsers out there right now are built on Chromium, which is the Chrome web browser platform. And I'm not sure there's a lot of extra bells and whistles that I get from leaving Chrome. Firefox, I think, is where I'm going to be going up to this summer once Chrome releases Manifest 3, which is going to break a lot of the ad block that everybody has been relying on for so long. And I think that's going to be the death of Chrome for a lot of advanced users. Everybody's just going to go to Firefox.
I'm pretty sure Tor is based on Firefox.
Firefox, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. And while we take that break, if you want to go to Google, you can just Google Privacy Badger, B-A-D as in David, G-George, E-R. And the very top one that pops up is the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation Privacy Badger, B-A-D as in David, G as in George, E-R. And we'll come right back with Patrick Crispin here on WGN.
We're talking computer stuff with Patrick Crispin, Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. And just before we jump back into some other things, I want to go back to what we were talking about before
cookies and
we broke. And Tom Hoots, he's no longer the executive producer. What is he now? He's the
he's the seat.
The early producer.
Former.
I was going to say former, seat warmer. No, seat warmer.
Seat warmer. Yeah, well, I'm keeping this one warm. No, the question I had is in terms of cruising around on the internet using a search engine, is there an advantage to using something like DuckDuckGo?
Yes, because it does. It by default says it does not track you at all, with one exception. Kim Komando actually discovered that they had a licensing agreement with Microsoft last summer, where if you clicked on some of the ads on your phone in DuckDuckGo, Microsoft would know your IP address, Other than that, yes, it's absolutely completely safe. It's a really good browser. All right, sorry, yeah. Really good search engine.
In fact, DuckDuckGo has become my default search engine for
and
that
reason. I put them on my phone, too,
yeah,
and use it instead of Chrome, which is loaded on the phone. 630 area code says, if my iOS device is already set to not use third-party cookies, can I just ignore those cookie pop-ups? By the way, go ahead.
No, because, again, if you ignore them, you are consenting to get them in.
So don't do as Johnny does, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, don't do what Johnny does. The issue is that we're kind of caught in a weird situation where your browser on your phone is very likely trying to tell all these other sites, do not track this person. But it's still kind of opt-in for those sites on whether or not they're going to agree to do that. iOS actually does have a lot of privacy built into it, but if you ever see a pop-up message saying, do you want to accept cookies or not, you've got to say, do not sell my personal information.
Okay. And the 630 area code says, I usually delete my data after visiting each website. Isn't that a good thing to do?
It is, sort of. The thing is, there are still ways for them to track you. I still think it's a good idea to have, you know, either Safari or Firefox, some sort of ad blocking tool on your computer as just an extra level of precaution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, people are asking questions at 312-981-7200, but we've got so many things we need to talk to you about. It was a lousy week for Elon Musk. Combination of the of his stock price is tanking and his shareholders getting upset with him. There was this little thing called the Starship Enterprise?
Starship Enterprise.
Actually, we were here on the radio when these big monitors over our head showed the explosion you said that there was an upside to that explosion, right, Patrick?
There's good and bad. Let me tell you the good. First of all, I am a huge fan of the work that SpaceX is doing on this rocket and the fact that we now have, eventually, going to have the biggest rocket in the world that is going to be able to take us on to interplanetary travel. I think this is fantastic. The engineers who put this thing together are some of the smartest people in the world. This really was a test flight, as I've heard a lot of people say. Test flights like these almost always fail on the first flight. Mm-hmm. It's just every one of them failed. And it's just part of rocketry. There's going to be a lot of lessons learned from this, and it's a really positive thing. So you and I will look at this and say, oh, look, it blew up, and say, ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. No, this went so much further, so much farther. This is just a really, really huge, significant leap in space exploration. I'm excited by it. That said, I've got three concerns, and these are troubling concerns that I think the folks at SpaceX are going to fix. The first one is I noticed that this thing lifted off with three of the engines that didn't light. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't have happened. And what I mean by that is anybody who built a rocket, you have some sort of thing that checks to see if all the engines are firing. And if you don't, you shut down. Mm-hmm. The fact that this didn't shut down, that's troubling. The fact that you took off with three blown engines, you don't do that. That's really, 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 really bad. And then the other thing that we had was they kind of seem to have cut some corners on their launch platform. And instead of having some sort of exhaust diverter underneath it, then what is done down at the Cape is they'll have water down there, a big water trough. Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily to cool anything down. It's to cut down on the noise and the vibration bouncing back up and damaging the vehicle as it takes off. What SpaceX did down in Texas was they had a flat concrete pad underneath, and when they tested this the last time at only 50% power, it seemed to work. When they tested it at 100% power, it blew a 25-foot hole in the ground, and wow. Concrete went everywhere and, like, was blowing out windows, and it was a mess. They need a new launch platform. You know, so this was a poor design. Mm-hmm. They should have listened to the civil engineers and the structural engineers, because they were warned that this was going to happen. This happened. It was a bad thing.
Well,
the other
yeah.
thing is that
go ahead.
That it's tumbled for like nearly 50 seconds before being blown up. That's concerning, because anytime a vehicle like that goes out of control, it should be blown up. Rain safety officer going to blow this thing out of the sky. The fact that it had to tumble over and over and over again, mm-hmm. that's alarming. That said, I think these are three things that SpaceX is going to fix within the next 3 to 6 months. I think you're going to see another liftoff. It's going to be great. These were three big failures on a really, really successful flight.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk about the other side of Musk's
yes.
existence, but that's in a couple minutes.
Patrick.
Those of you who have your zits and plugs connected, you can see on your speaker the dancing icons that are going across your speaker. We're talking about computers with Patrick Crispin, a director of educational technology at the Keck School of Medicine of USC. And I wanted to come back to Mr. Musk and his endeavors with Twitter. And here's my question. Yeah, I still use Twitter. A lot of people still use Twitter. Since we're losing the blue check marks, this has caused more and more problems. For example, just over the past couple days, people were impersonating Mayor Lightfoot and other members from the city council and posting about Lakeshore Drive, DeSabo Lakeshore Drive, being closed down.
It's not going to be closed down, yeah. So don't listen with half an ear.
So here is my question. How do you determine what is real and what is not real on Twitter, since you've lost those blue check marks? I mean, are you just guessing? If you see something, do you just check it with other sources? Or what's your best suggestion?
You really have to check with other sources, and it's so unfortunate. I'm not sure what Elon's doing with Twitter right now. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm not sure he has a vision of what he wants Twitter to be. He wants it to be the everything app for everybody. And what that means is you're going to go there and you're going to spend all of your time on the Twitter app. It's going to be a payment system. It's going to be social media. It's going to be long-form text and things like that. And I think he had to go and kind of blow up the old Twitter to get to that. I think he's ended up hurting a lot of people's trust in the platform. And I'm not sure how he becomes the financial platform that he wants it to be, mm-hmm. if nobody trusts it. And that's the problem right now, is you used to be able to get a blue check mark, you had to be somebody who was a significant person and actually have to prove that you were the person that you said that you were. Mm-hmm. In return for you getting the little blue check mark, it told everybody who was interacting with you that, hey, I really was talking with Mike Royko, or I really was talking with Steve King, or I really was talking with, you know, Orion Samuelson, and these are the real people. And you could tell that it was that person, and it gave the opportunity for those people to then go onto Twitter and interact with people and sort of promote things and say, hey, I've got a show coming up tonight, listen in, or hey, I've got this issue I want you to know about. And it gave everybody in the laity the opportunity to kind of say, hey, I get to send a message back to this person and say, hey, have you thought about this? And it was a wonderful communication tool. What's happened is now, anybody who's willing to pay Elon $8
mm-hmm.
can now have a blue check mark. And because of that, you really don't have to verify that you are who you are. You just have to verify, one, that you have $8, and two, that you have a telephone number. And there are a lot of people who are faking that they are, you know, the city of New York or the city of Chicago or very famous people. Elon, earlier tonight, went and he had turned off blue check marks, as sort of the verification system for everybody, and then went back tonight without telling anybody and turned it back on for anybody who had more than 1 million followers. What's happened is a lot of the people with 1 million followers are saying, I don't really want to be associated with the people who are paying the $8. I don't want my name associated with these people, because I'm looking at the stuff that they're posting, and it's like, no, you've taken something, and you know, the blue check mark used to mean I'm me, you can trust me, and now it's I'm a troll, and I can post whatever I want, ha ha ha.
Wasn't it just earlier this week? Wasn't it just earlier this week that NPR said no, we're out of here?
Yeah,
and PBS
NPR said it.
And it sent Musk into a snit, where he was replying with some really stupid tweets.
PBS said that they have no plans to resume tweeting after Twitter gave them a murky government-funded media label.
Yeah.
They said, no, we're not going to tolerate
that. They did the same thing with NPR. I mean, that was a...
Yeah.
You know, NPR and BBC.
Yeah, and the BBC, WKGC being an NPR station, you know, this is not a great thing. We're not government-funded media, don't think.
No.
And Patrick, I touched on earlier tonight the fact that I got involved in what I deem kind of a stalking situation with a person that I innocently was communicating with because they had the blue check, and I thought this was legitimately the person that I had gone onto an entertainer's page, and he's very active with his fans, and I had posted on that page.
And this is someone that we have had on the show, but we're not going to say who it was.
No, I posted on his page, and then privately, I get a message from him, quote-unquote, with a blue check mark, and I thought, oh, cool, he remembers that we've had him on the show a number of times. He wouldn't go away. Then I became aware of the fact it's not him.
And some of the things that he was
starting
saying
to ask me,
and asking
I
were,
said, holy smokes.
Johnny told me about it, and I said immediately, no.
Get rid of
not
it.
Not him.
Here's the thing. Going back to the whole idea, and Elon has sort of called this X.com, and he wants it to be the X app. It's always been his pipe dream, even back before he was with PayPal. And, you know, would you trust Elon with your financial information? Because I believe in SpaceX and what they did with the rocket, what they did with Starlink, fantastic. Got to admit, what he's done with Tesla has been fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm just, the trust here is really problematic, and
isn't that really one of the key things? You can no longer trust Twitter.
Well, and that's the thing is, when you talk about finance, you want to know that Visa and MasterCard are as pale, plain, neutral as humanly possible. They are boring companies. They are not going to go in one political direction or another political direction. I can't guarantee that X.com isn't going to sit there and say, I'm not going to allow you to go and make payments to, you know, some political party that I don't agree with or to some organization. Or I'm going to sit there and say, I've decided that I don't like Ukraine anymore, and I'm not going to allow you to send any money to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
So it's frustrating because Elon's such a smart guy. He's done some really good things. I think he has really taken a $44 billion pile of money and set it on fire with Twitter. I don't know what he's thinking. If I were on the board of directors of Tesla, I'd be sitting there saying, yeah, this is, boss, you need to get back to work over here.
Yeah.
And see, I would put an asterisk next to what you just said. You said Elon is a smart guy. Okay, yeah. Asterisk. As long as he doesn't let his emotions get involved in his decision-making process. And I think he really did that with Twitter on a lot of levels. And the chickens are coming home to roost. And I'm reading conflicting things. On one hand, I guess Twitter is slowly starting to get kind of financially okay. But in terms of...
I don't know the advertisers are returning.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And part of it is... I'm not talking about advertisers returning.
I'm talking about apparently some of the cuts that he has made, as bad as they have been.
All the layoffs and things.
His financial statement on Twitter isn't as bad as it was when he took it over, I guess.
But again, part of this is a lot of Elon is trolling just to be funny. I mean, the model numbers for the Teslas, the S, the 3, the X, and the Y. He was going to do a Model E, but Ford owns that. So if you spell it out, it's sexy. Wow. Funny.
when he walked into to Twitter carrying a toilet.
It was a sink.
It was a sink. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. What about naming his kid? Isn't his kid something like XK2ZY?
Yeah.
Bless his heart. And we're going to take a quick break. But, Patrick, before we do, just yes or no, do you use Twitter?
I do. I don't post as much nearly as I'd like to, and I'm finding a less utility from it. But a lot of the people I still follow are still there, especially in the AI world.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that's something else we have to touch on, too, tonight. Talking with Patrick Crispin here on WGN. We're going to get to some questions at 312-981-7200. Question about Facebook coming in. I expected that. And stay with us here on WGN.
I love watching all those ones and zeros dancing around the the room. Before we leave the Musk room, I have to return to one final question, then we'll jump to some other things. And I know we've talked about this before, Patrick, but at this point, any viable alternatives to Twitter, Facebook? I mean, we've talked about Post and Mastodon.
Yeah.
Anything new on the horizon that we should be looking at?
There are a couple new ones that are coming out. Nothing that I'd say has any traction. All the people who said they were going to leave Twitter have returned to Twitter. Post is interesting. Post.news. I'm still waiting for something to happen there.
Yeah,
it's intriguing. Mastodon is just a little too wonky for a lot of people. Twitter was a great platform. There are some new Twitter clones that are coming up, but again, it's going to require a lot of people who were part of the Twitter community, and that's what made Twitter great, were the people. It's going to take a lot of those people leaving en masse and going someplace else for
how about the waitlist for Twitter
site to be viable. Yeah.
There's a wait list?
Yeah, sign up to be on the wait list for Twitter, too.
Okay.
Am I right about this, Patrick? It's some of the people who used to be involved with Twitter and it's just called T2, I think?
T2, yeah. And it's some of the old Twitter people have set it up, and it's the idea of, we're going to go back to Twitter like 5-6 years ago and just do what we used to do. Huge wait list. Again, setting up something like this, it requires a lot of money, and that's something Elon has. He has a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And it's, unfortunately, there's nothing's come yet that I can sit there and say, yep, that's the reason why I'm leaving Twitter. Because, again, a lot of the people in the AI world that I follow are on Twitter, and it's probably the best place right now for me to find that information.
Yeah. Can I take you to Facebook for a moment? Because we got a good question about Facebook. And I just wonder if you have any take on what's been going on Facebook. Because I have had so many friends in the past 2 weeks say, my account is frozen.
Yep.
Or I'm in jail. I didn't do anything wrong. What's going on? I mean, they're not using any of the words or any no images that, that would red flag them. Do you, are you getting any sense that there's some something that's going on there that we're better buckle up for?
Nothing at scale yet, but realistically, my recommendation to everybody is if you have a Facebook account, turn on two-factor authentication. There have been some people who have been taking over other people's Facebook accounts.
Yes.
And then posting things that end up getting them into trouble. It's really, really frustrating.
That's how it happens, I bet. Yeah.
Yep.
And well, okay, take a moment and talk about what two-factor authentication is, because a lot of people may not know it by that term, but maybe they know when they sign onto their bank account, they are asked a question or they're sent a code. That's, in fact, two-factor authentication, right?
Yeah, the two-factor authentication for most of these sites is it's going to send you a text message to your cell phone completely off the record that's about as secure as, you know, as a tissue paper wall, but it's better than nothing. A better way to do it is to use something like Google Authenticator, which is something that can't be spoofed that we know of. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you just basically on any of the websites that have data that you really want to protect, you're going to go into the settings, go into the privacy and security settings, and you're going to turn on two-factor or multi-factor authentication. And what it'll do is it'll say, hey, can you give me your cell phone number? You can trust it when you do this. And it will send you a text message with a six-digit code, and you'll enter that six-digit code to prove that you have the phone that you say that you have. Mm-hmm. And then from now on, anytime somebody tries to log in, even if they have your password, they're still not going to be able to get in without that second factor, which is going to be a text message that's going to come to your mobile phone that has a new six-digit number that you will then have to enter within the next X number of seconds.
And is it a little bit of a pain? Yeah, but does it make a huge difference? Yeah.
Huge difference.
It is essential on anything that has anything. You need to set it up on anything that has photos of you, anything that has your social media, because you just don't want to lose access to that information, because that's your life online nowadays.
Right. Okay, so Laura sends us a text, and she said that for some reason her Facebook page was frozen. So she didn't think she didn't do anything wrong, so she just opened another Facebook account. Then she got a message that her original Facebook account was no longer in jail. It was unfrozen. So now she has two Facebook accounts. And so she's confused because she's got friends on both sides and she doesn't want to lose all the good stuff that was on the original account. Is there anything that we could recommend that she do to combine them, to get rid of one of them?
The answer is, Laura, you done goofed. I'm sorry to tell you this. Facebook's community standards doesn't allow you to have two personal pages. And because of that, they don't have any mechanism to merge accounts. What you're going to need to do is on this new site that you have, the new account, you want to go and just download all of the friends, maybe download all the data in your timeline and everything, and then delete that account, go back to your old account, and manually add your users, and some of the posts that you post are going to be gone. There just is no way in Facebook to merge accounts. It's not possible.
On that note, we're going to have to hit the pause button. Can you hang with us for a few minutes after the news?
We've got to come back and talk for just a few minutes about this lawsuit, because we all need to get our money about the Facebook lawsuit. Okay.
Yes.
So stay with us here on WGN. We are talking to one of our original, if not our original, cyber guys from Website Wednesday Night.
Mm-hmm.
If you listened to us when we were Steve and Johnny 1.0, on one of those 6,000-plus shows, you know the name Patrick Crispin. Why, in fact, you all grew up with Patrick. He grew up with us on the radio.
We first talked with Patrick when he was a student in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He is now the Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC.
Yes, and Patrick, we've opened up a few little cans of worms. If we can, just go back to two-step authentication. And we were talking about how you need to have two-step authentication for your Facebook page. So if you get locked out.
And really for everything.
Or somebody steals it or whatever. A listener from a 414 area code says, I don't want them to have my phone number. Years ago, when you had to give it for Messenger, I did, and I used it once. A few years later, I downloaded my Facebook information, and what showed up for my phone was an itemized phone record of all incoming and outgoing numbers. Time made and the length of those phone calls. I know my number is somewhere in their system, but that is not the one listed to contact me. I now sign in with a dummy address and addresses for them to contact me that are not used either. I'm not tagged, and my pictures are of places, not of humans. Well, that's good for you, but I can't just take pictures of places and food. I got to put some people in my pictures, and that's the way it's always going to be. But what about using a dummy? I mean, if you use a dummy number, then they can't get that authentication that they need before they can let you back on.
What you can do, though, is there's an app that you can put on your mobile device called Google Authenticator. And Google Authenticator is basically something that every 30 seconds will generate a new number for you. And you can actually use Google Authenticator with Facebook. It absolutely works. It's fantastic. And that's actually what I do. I've tried to go through almost all the websites that I sign up to that have two-factor authentication and turn off the telephone. I just don't want the telephone coming to me. I'm going to use Google Authenticator if I can.
Okay. Oh, that's a good point. So for our listener, I was totally freaked out when he said that a whole call list came up with length of phone calls and stuff. And it was like, I've never heard that before. That seems like some other wrinkle in time, or I don't even know how
that
happened.
I've not heard that either, but I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. Another listener says, I have reported scammers to Twitter and Facebook, and in my experience of reporting bad actors, Twitter has been or was better than Facebook removal of scammers. I have to agree there, because I have lousy luck reporting scammers on Facebook.
They fired everybody.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
If you try to contact their public relations department, they have an auto reply with a poop emoji.
What?
That's Twitter's public relations is an auto reply with a poop emoji.
What was I saw a couple weeks ago the percentage of people that are no longer at Twitter since Musk took over.
It's the size of Rhode Island.
It's a skeleton crew.
Oh my gosh. 3331 says, LOL, tell Patrick that smart doesn't necessarily equal having common sense or common decency.
Oh, I agree.
Amen. Okay, speaking
Trust
of smart.
Trust me, you've just described me.
So last week there was a lot of talk about, there's a lawsuit against Facebook. And if you had a Facebook page between May 24th of 07 and December of 2022, you could have a cut of $725 million in this settlement that will come about in August of this year. The first obvious question is, Patrick, is this legit?
Well, there are two ways to answer this. The truth is, yes, this is legit. Here's the reason why I'm saying there's two ways to answer this. The more people who sign up for this, the smaller the payout's going to be.
Yep.
So my recommendation is we only tell it to your listeners, but we ask the listeners not to tell anybody else about it so that we all get the money and split it amongst ourselves.
Okay.
So if anybody asks, it's completely fake.
It's wrong.
Don't sign up.
Completely fake.
Don't do
it. Yeah. It's absolutely legitimate. There's a $725 million settlement if you sign up for it. Easiest way to do it is just go to WGNradio.com and search for Facebook settlement. They have a link to it right there. It goes to Facebook UserPrivacySettlement.com, which is a lot of words. So just go through the WGN website.
Does this go
It'll
back
ask
to
you
when...
for some information. Go ahead.
Yeah. Does this go back to when Zuckerberg was before Congress and talked about keeping everybody's information private and et cetera, et cetera?
This is actually more from the Cambridge Analytica sort of debacle where they were tracking us going on the Internet. This is from a Northern California lawsuit, and they just did a settlement instead of saying that they did anything wrong. But again, it's going to be, yes, it's $725 million. It's for only U.S. people, but there are 239 million Facebook users. The reality is the lawyers are going to get a third of that $725 million. There's going to be maintenance fees and things like that. It's probably going to be about $400 million split amongst all the people who sign up for this thing. Realistically, you probably get 100, 150 million people who sign up for this thing. You're getting $2. but again, $2 is $2, and sign up for it. It's you just fill out a claim online between now and August 25th. Choose how you want to get paid. I think I'm having mine sent as a gift card, like a MasterCard gift card.
No.
We'll see what happens.
I want Bitcoin. That's how I want mine.
But it is absolutely legit. You can sign up for this thing.
And just think, they give you the option of printing out the claim form and then mailing it in the old-fashioned way. And if you're lucky, you'll get the money back for your stamp. Right?
Because what? The stamps are now like 60 cents?
So,
yeah,
if you're lucky.
Yeah, it's real. You're going to get a couple bucks. It's not going to be a huge amount of money. You're not going to retire, but hey, free money.
But you know what? We can laugh about that, but in the state of Illinois, there was a settlement, and honestly, as it was circulating, a lot of us, myself included, thought it was some kind of a joke.
Yep.
And until friends of ours started posting pictures of their $329 facial recognition check. And there was a lawsuit. If mm-hmm. you know your pictures were out there,
that was totally legit.
It was legit, and $329 is that'll buy a few stamps for sure.
You're not going to get that from Facebook.
I guess you're right, but it is legit. And like as you said, yeah. We can go to the WGN Radio website, and the address is right there. Patrick, as always, thank you for your time. We really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
We'll talk to you.
We have a lot more coming up, so stay with us at WGN. That is Tommy Emmanuel, along with Little Feet and Sam Bush.
Little Feet?
Yeah.
Dixie Chicken. Oh, yeah. My gosh. I saw them in 1975.
Dixie, we got to play Dixie Chicken for a
moment.
Yeah. We haven't done that in a while.
But the Tommy Emmanuel, who will be coming to Chicago in the fall.
He will be joining us next week. In fact, the blatant plug light has just gone on, and we should mention that next week, yes, we're still going to be in Panama City Beach, and we're going to be joined by Tommy Emmanuel. We'll talk cars with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Michael Lister, one of our favorite authors from the Panama City Beach area, will be joining us. Don Perlman, a name you know from news in Chicago, but he has got a whole new life as a numismatist.
Yes, he's a very respected numismatist. And we're going to talk about coins and coin collecting and sunken treasure and this little auction that he was involved in. In fact, one of you guys in the studio may recall, there was a pawn shop in downtown Panama City.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a coin that was auctioned off, and it was like the most expensive auction ever for a single coin. And it was right
was
here.
This was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was in Panama City. It was one of the places that was really hurt by Hurricane Michael.
It wasn't Dan's pawn shop.
No, not Dan's pawn. This was on... on 15th, I think.
And people would actually come here, like a tourist attraction, just to see this coin that was ultimately auctioned off at a price that had never, ever been seen before.
Something like Panama City coin or something like that.
Well, we'll get him to tell us the whole story because he was involved in that whole story, too. I think he may have even come to Panama City for authentication of that coin. That always blew my mind that it was right here. Anyway, we're going to talk about coin collecting. In fact, over the next few months, we're going to be doing a series of collecting or collectible shows. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about sports card collectibles or all sports collectibles in general, guitar collecting.
We're going to try and get in touch with our friend Wayne Jancic and talk about records and one-hit wonders.
Right. So, Wayne, if you're out there, we keep leaving you messages.
Serious. Wayne Jancic, author of the Billboard Book of One-Hit Wonders. We have called him umpteen times.
Yes.
We will, once every 6 months, out of the blue, we get a phone call from Wayne yes. saying, "Hi, guys.
Where are you?
Where are you?" And and we call him back, and we never,
never know. Yeah. And Wayne actually holds the record. Patrick is right behind Wayne, but Wayne is the longest running regular guest. He was on our show for 20 years, once a month, and he missed two times in 20 years.
And we wrote the foreword for Wayne's book, the Billboard Book of One-Hit Wonders. The first time we met Wayne Jancic, I will never forget. We'd read his book.
Yep.
Then we went over to his house. If you can imagine, and I am not exaggerating.
A two-story house.
Two-story house. You walk into the house. He carefully opens the door. And you walk through the rows of records that are stacked throughout the house.
But now, no, remember...
His wife
said there were, could not be a piece of vinyl on the first floor. If there was a piece of vinyl on the first
floor. Well, he still, when we first met him, he still hadn't taken all the vinyl up.
Yeah,
but then
but
he
she
was
said
taking.
It would go to the garbage if it stayed
up. And that's
on
how
the first
he discovered that the house needed work, because there was so much vinyl on the second floor that it was causing problems with the structure of the house. So
and the floor was sagging.
It was. So he moved his cars out of his garage to put some of the vinyl in his garage.
In his garage.
I mean, he had, I forget how. How many hundreds of thousands of records?
Oh, he knew something like 250,000 pieces of vinyl. And he was still going and picking up people's collections, because at that time people were just saying, well, I don't have any use for that. Probably not the case today. But I can recall the freaky thing was when we walked into the apartment on the second floor and you walked into the kitchen. And where there was a refrigerator, there was vinyl on the refrigerator.
Literally.
And it was on the stove and on the table and in the pantry. And remember a local TV show, Wild Chicago.
Yeah, Wild Chicago, they came
and the cameraman hurt himself trying to walk through the apartment because it was so tight with little paths through all the vinyl. Bless his heart, he knew everything that was
Wayne,
in there.
If you're out there, we're trying to contact you.
We love you. We miss you. You were a regular part of our show for 20 years. And I think
and it was through Wayne Jancic. I will never forget this. Through Wayne Jancic, because we always tried to get one-hit wonders on. That's how we first met Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
That's right. Yes.
Which turned out to be a great, fun relationship. Screamin' Jay Hawkins was a wonderful person.
And so often when I'm watching the music shows like The Voice or American Idol, and somebody comes out there and says, I'm going to do the Annie Lennox version of I Put a Spell on You or some other version, and I'm screaming at the TV, no, that's Screamin' Jay's song. But it's just nice that it still lives on, that there's a whole new audience that loves that song, I Put a Spell on You.
And it was, I will never forget, we finally got to meet, after talking with him on the air for years, we finally got to meet Screamin' Jay Hawkins in person. Because he was living in France, but we had talked to him so many times that the producers of the Chicago Blues Fest wanted to have him over for the to headline the 13th Chicago Blues Fest. We had his contact information. We put everybody in touch with everybody. He comes over, and one of the fun things, since he was going to be headlining the Blues Fest, he has a song that he does called Constipation Blues. We had to take Screamin' Jay Hawkins to a store to buy
a toilet.
A toilet. And he loved the fact that the city of Chicago had to pay for the stage toilet.
and send a crew out to pick it up and put it on the stage. Absolutely. He was such a sweet guy. Gosh. Speaking of music, in this hour next week, we'll be talking with Lisa McClowery.
Yes.
She's going to join us to tell us all about a concert that is coming up that you guys can catch. Because if you follow Lisa, you know she's been in Australia. She's been really everywhere but Chicago. But she's going to be doing a show at the Genesee Theater the following Friday, but she'll tell us all about it next week when she's on the program.
And so, and speaking of music.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to break. Coming out of the break after the news, we do a little bumps. We're going to bump back with a group that you will meet in this studio a few weeks from now. This is a local group. They're called Jack and Jen. And I'm just forewarning you, because it's some extraordinary music, some extraordinary talent on here.
And it's perfect for this hour of the night,
too. Yeah, and we'll introduce you to them in a couple weeks. Oof. I know that may not be everybody's cup of tea, but I love that.
I do,
that.
Too.
That is Death Roll. It's by Jack and Jin. Jack and Jin are from the Panama City area, and we're going to have them in the studio with us live in a couple weeks. They are just extraordinary talents.
I got to find out the story behind the song Death Roll. Also, the story behind their name, because she's actually Sandy and he's actually Eli. So I'm thinking something happened in a bar and somebody ordered a little Jack with some gin.
I think it's a great name.
And they said, Jack and,
because it's spelled Jack and G-I-N.
G-I-N, like gin and tonic, yeah.
And I first discovered Sandy, it was after Hurricane Michael. And Johnny and I were still in Chicago. We were very concerned about her dad, who was down here with Hurricane Michael at that time. And we were paying a lot of attention to a lot of the posts on Facebook and some of the other places from this area. And I came across this wonderful text, or it was a post that Sandy did about the aftermath of Hurricane Michael. And we became Facebook friends as a result of that. I didn't know at that time that she was also involved with music. And come to find out all these years later, wow, is she a talent.
And Jack and Jin will be in studio, right here in this studio with us, on May 6th, technically May 7th, because it's going to be in the midnight hour. And we're going to get their whole story, and they're going to come in here and perform with us, and it's going to be fun.
And we should mention, too, that this studio, we're taking you on the road for a couple of weeks, for those of you that are just joining us. Yes, we're still live, but we are broadcasting from the studios of WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida, for the next couple of weeks. We're at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City. And thanks to Caleb Jordan and Tom Hoots several of the people here at the Gulf Coast State College.
You said we're still live, not alive, right?
Right.
Because I looked at Tom.
Alive is a totally different word.
I was thinking, okay, at least three of us are alive.
Yeah. The show is live. How many of us involved in the show are
live?
Awake? That's a whole nother story.
Well, bless his heart. He usually goes to bed probably, what, 9:30, 10 o'clock? Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's 10 o'clock's a late night. Yeah, if you're going to get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, you have to go to bed early.
Well, you know what? We'll call you 4:30 or 5 to be sure you get up this morning.
Oh, no. Don't do
that. Because our problem
is... I'm hoping to make, maybe 6 o'clock, so...
I put the word out on our block, to our landscaper in particular, that when we do the show, we get home and we can't go right to bed. You kind of have to unwind. So sometimes we don't go to bed till like 5 or 6. So maybe don't mow on Sunday morning. Maybe you could come on Monday or Tuesday, or just let it grow. I don't care. Okay. I do not want the time to get away from us, because we have our last call coming up, then we're going to wrap up this show. There is truly the freakiest story that I want to leave you all with. This is the stuff of nightmares.
It's only April. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
But it's the middle of the night, and we're all adults, so I can
share. Well, we just played Death Roll, so.
That's true. This is great. Set the mood.
Okay.
Did you guys hear about the cattle dying in Texas?
Oh, this is freaky. And it's true.
Okay. Six cattle, different farms, not all in the same place, in the past week have been found dead. There was no blood. The grass around them is not disturbed. Their tongues have been cut out. And a few of them have had removed.
The rest of the digestive system.
But no...
No blood.
No blood. Nothing. Oh, and one side of the face is also gone on the cow. Now... FBI has been called in because it was six different locations. To quote them, doesn't look unusual at all. I'm sorry. Call somebody from
if
Roswell.
If the FBI is saying this is normal,
this is Texas. Roswell. Somebody from... Somebody's got to... This is really freaky. And I first saw the story and I said, oh, this can't be real. And I went to four or five different sources and they're running with this because people are baffled. Farmers are freaked out, obviously. If you walked out and you found one of your cows lying there, then you realize its tongue had been cut out.
There is an unscripted TV show that features that once in a while.
It's what?
Called, yes.
What kind of stuff called, are you watching? What kind of cable system are you on?
I don't know. We don't get real good cable in Panama City. You know that. But, if you look at the, I think it's the Mystery of Skinwalker Ranch, it's called.
Oh, no.
And they have shown some of the, and it's, I believe you'll find the eye on the side of the head that's looking up would be removed, too.
Yes.
Okay. Well, they talk about this all the time. They had one die.
Here's the
You
weird
know
thing.
Way too much about this, Tom. I'm sorry.
Well, if this hasn't happened on the show, it will. The cuts are apparently precision, like with surgical tools. And how do you get a cow to sit still? I mean, it blows my mind. Again, we're adults here. I know this is gross, but two of them had their anuses removed with precision cuts. I'm sorry, no human would do that. That's an alien. That's it. The only way we can describe this.
You know, I was waiting. I was wondering why we were this late. I was waiting for us to get to it's aliens.
Aliens, yep. Yes. Yep. No footprints. The grass was not disturbed. No blood. Six different farms.
And it only happens at night.
And in Texas.
Well, the one at Skinwalker Ranch is a Utah.
Skinwalker
thing,
Ranch? That makes my skin crawl.
Well, that's that's a Navajo thing.
Really?
It's a shapeshifter in Navajo, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Apparently there's a fight going on between a couple of Indian tribes, and the Navajos cursed this property with skinwalkers.
Whoa.
It's a weird show, but...
you think?
If I have a choice between watching that or watching the news, I'm going for the alien cow abductions. You know, I'm not watching the news. Yeah. And I think it makes more sense, too, than the news I see nowadays.
Okay. Well, again, I'll close this story by saying, once more, the FBI was quoted as saying, there's no indication that anything unusual has happened here. All right, now.
On that note, before we break.
Yes.
You know what time it is. We're getting ready for the last call. They're flicking the lights.
Yes.
So if you want to be our...
Caleb's going to start sweeping the floor around us.
If you want to be our last caller and win some goodies from the prize list, you can give us a call right now.
Yep.
Number to call is 312-981-7200. That number again, 312-981-7200. And you may be our last caller, and we will...
We'll
arbitrarily pick a number.
Yes, that's
callers.
How we try to make it. I think we do make it fair because we have a big bank of lines, and when the calls come in, so that we don't just choose the first caller that comes in and make them the last caller, we take a bank of calls, and then our producer, Andrew B., gives us the number of people who've called in. We choose a lucky number, and that's the lucky last caller. And they get to be on the radio with us, and they get to just chat about nonsense or some intelligent stuff. It doesn't matter. No requirements. And then you win prizes. So stay with us, and you can be the last caller, 312-981-7200 on WGN Radio.
Yep, they're flicking the lights, ready for our last call.
I hope they get that big buffer out and they buff the floors in a few minutes so we'll know it's officially the last call. That's kind of my fantasy, to drive one of those buffers, but that's another story. We have some folks on the line, and we're going to keep it simple this week. We are going with, you agree with me?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take number one.
Yep.
Lucky number one. And say good morning to Ryan on line one. Hi, Ryan.
Morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Steve and Johnny. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Where are you calling from?
Calling from Elburn, Illinois.
Elburn. Oh, we used to love the Fisherman's Inn in Elburn.
Yeah. Some of our first dates were at the Fisherman's Inn, and that's the place where we used to go there. And literally, the fish that you would be eating for dinner had been swimming.
Yeah. Or so
in
they
the
said.
Pool outside.
Yeah.
And you got those. We still have some of the matchbooks. They used to give you the matchbooks with your name printed on them.
Yes. Are you too young to know any of that, Ryan?
No, I've been there many times.
Really?
They changed it over to a wedding venue now.
Oh, is it? So the building is actually still there?
It's still there.
Oh, well, that's good, because that was a gorgeous location.
Now, is it only a wedding venue, or can you still go out there for dinner or something, or...?
Nope, you can only go there for wedding venues, so you'd have to get married in the future.
Well, no, actually, we have a 40th anniversary coming up next
year. So maybe
this
for our 40th anniversary, we'll go to the...
We'll just have us a party.
I like
now,
that.
Now, I don't know if we can find anybody to come, but we'll have a party out in Elburn.
Why are you up at this hour of the morning?
Well, my sister has been speaking to you, Aunt Salvis.
Oh, you're the... Oh, you have
a... Getting back and forth.
Ryan has a link... to Panama City because his sister is a producer at WMBB.
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, we just had a Facebook message from her this week.
Yes, we're going to get...
How weird.
We're going to get together and have coffee with her next week. That is so cool that you called.
It's 6 degrees of Ryan.
Or...
There you go.
Or Panama City. Because I remember the night we were on the air... And I think we were back in Chicago, right, Ryan? And you sent the text.
Yeah, 6 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, and you said, do you know my sister? And we had just interviewed Amy Hoyt, and your sister works with Amy Hoyt on WMBB. Mm-hmm. That is so cool. Well, your sister's gone on to big things. What about you?
Well, right now,
that's a great question. Your sister did good. What about you, kid?
I just wanted to see if anybody's listening.
I'm doing my best.
I'm sorry?
I said, I'm certainly doing my best.
Are you? Okay.
I've worked in the service industry in the Chicagoland area for a long time.
Oh, well, good. Well,
what do you do? Seriously.
I didn't mean to offend anybody, so I'm just teasing you.
I used to work in the car business. I worked for Russo Power Equipment. We're located out of Schiller Park, Illinois.
Sure.
Out of their store.
And you commute anywhere from Elburn? I love it out there, but that's a fur piece.
Well, Elgin's only about a half hour away from there, so.
Okay.
Okay. It's
very close.
Well, we're listening tonight, and I believe your sister's also listening. I think she sent me a text and said she'd be tuned into the live stream this evening.
Mm-hmm. So
hopefully she's still awake and she's hearing you.
So, really quick, I just wanted to say... the first time I heard your show was when I was coming back up from visiting her about a year and a half ago when you were doing the radio drive-by with Lisa Dent, right when she was first starting.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, thank you for sticking around and hanging out with us in the wee hours of the morning.
Absolutely. And honestly, I'm going to be thrilled to see you in a WGN Radio Retro T-shirt.
Are really cool. Yeah, not just because we work for WGN, but these are really cool T-shirts.
You're going to get one of those. And, Ryan, you're going to get a desktop weather station from American Weathermakers Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. The 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And congratulations. And it sure is nice to actually talk to you. Thanks.
So hold on. We'll get some information from you off the air.
Thank you.
Take care, Ryan.
And I just realized, before we wrap up and get out of here, we didn't get to complete all of our round robin because we didn't get to talk to Dan Long, who...
the keeper of the big plug.
Yes. Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Hey, good evening. Or morning, I guess, technically, for everybody.
Good grief.
Yes, good grief. Yeah.
So now you have to be at the radio station, and it's going to be dark and scary in those halls. Did I freak you out with that cow story?
Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about that for the rest of the night now.
Going to be watching out for all those cows walking through the hall.
If I hear hoof clops, I'll know what it is at least.
I got a text from someone said, oh, thanks. And I knew exactly what they were thanking me for. Oh, golly. Well, we've come full circle because we remember when we started the show with the Maverick brothers?
Yes.
Bart and Brett Maverick.
Bart and Brett Maverick.
Were you out to lunch during that?
I did miss that. Yeah, I was not in the studio then.
It was one of the highlights of my broadcast career. It really was.
3 minutes into the show. Whoops.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Dan, for because when Dan is doing what he's doing as the keeper of the big plug, he rarely has to sit and listen to every word of the show. But when we're on the road, he has to listen to everything.
Yeah. Yep.
So bless your heart, Dan, for putting up with it.
It's you know, doesn't hurt to work every once in a while. I got no problem with that.
Okay. That's a good attitude. Now be sure that Andrew is capable of walking out of the building because I think he's just being propped up there.
We never got Andrew to sing karaoke. Okay, next week, Andrew, you're singing karaoke.
He's still on with the call.
That loud silence. He said,
What?
Yeah. Well, thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. And also here in the studio, our now executive on-site producer, Caleb Jordan. You stick around, you'll be the president of the company.
I'm just waiting.
Okay. Come back next week, and maybe we can make that happen.
Grand poobah on location.
Good.
And Tom, stay awake on your drive home.
I will do that.
Okay. And all of you guys, thank you very much for hanging out with us. We're going to be doing this again next week. Whether you like it or not, we're going to be here. Thank you so much for sticking around with us. We really appreciate
it. And follow us on Facebook at The Steve and Johnny Show. And like us, and you can sign up for our blog, and we're not going to spam you. We're not going to sell your information. You don't have to worry about any of that nonsense.
Well, you might worry about it, but you don't need to. Okay, I think we're out of words.
Yeah, we are.
Good night.
Good night.